Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
Be the man.
You gotta beat the man.
Woo!
It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
And this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki, is it? It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you?
God! Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
And welcome everybody to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. Click Wrestle On Demand at clickwrestle.com is our official podcast site. You can also find us on iTunes at any time from episode 1 till tonight. Phone number, as always, is 267-297-1397. If you're joining us for the model, Rick Martel, he will be here during the 10 o'clock hour. Bad news! Due to his real life getting in the way, he had a business engagement this evening, so the Spud Guy and I conducted an hour-long interview with the man who many feel should be a part of this year's Hall of Fame class in Atlanta. Music tonight is brought to you by a group that should have their own wing in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but hey, I'm biased, and that would be the vocalist stylings of Freddie Mercury, Brian May on guitar, John Deacon on bass, and Roger Taylor on drums. That would be the British pop band, or progressive rock as they used to be called in the 70s, Queen. The Spud Guy will probably join us at some point during the evening. Around 9:30, if he is able to dial in with us, Brian Shields will join us for a few moments. He is one of the co-authors of the WWE Encyclopedia, which is a very interesting coffee table book. If you are in WrestleMania memories mode like we are on the show, or want to read up on stuff, the Royal Rumble, he will join us here. He is going to be hosting the first of what he believes to be many multimedia history of WWE events. So if you live in the New York City area near Franklin Square, you can hit the Franklin Square Library on Saturday, and we'll get into that later on. We will definitely get into everything TNA wrestling as we get closer to Against All Odds. And thank you, Nature Boy Ric Flair, for giving me a lot to talk about in the 11 o'clock hour after we get done with the model, Rick Martel. As mentioned, Spug will possibly be joining us in a few moments, and after surviving watching three Royal Rumbles, I don't know if he did it in a row, I don't know if he lasted the whole Royal Rumble or got thrown out the last second, our friend from WrestleTalk Radio, Talker Talk Live, Bashing the Books, also the Tap Outs to Knockouts, Mace is joining us. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, sir, and welcome.
Good evening, Owen.
As a very interesting last couple days in WWE, as we get closer to the go-home edition of SmackDown, we will talk about the go-home edition of Monday Night Raw. One of the more interesting things come out of this past SmackDown, once again, They have improved in the ratings. Both Sci-Fi, which is a part of NBC Universal, and WWE issued a press statement today announcing that the January 21st broadcast of SmackDown had a 3.3 million viewers in total, making it the channel's, and this is surprising with all the great programs they have, including Battlestar Galactica and Caprica and Warehouse 13, and now the U.S. remake of Being Human is on there, the channel's most watched Friday primetime telecast since July of 2004. That's amazing. And this show featured Drew McIntyre's continuing storyline, taking on Trent Beretta, Jack Swagger, defeating Kofi Kingston in an amateur wrestling challenge. Dashing Cody Rhodes possibly was injured, never got a 100% confirmation on that, during his match with Rey Mysterio. The Glamazon Beth Phoenix defeated Layla L. Alberto Del Rio once again defeated Ronda Truth Killings. And The Core, as we're pronouncing it still, even though it's now spelled C-O-R-R-E, for those at home with your spell check going, that ain't right, dude. Yes, it's right. We checked with WWE's website. We saw it last night on Monday Night Raw. We saw it on Friday Night SmackDown. They're spelling it Core. I don't know if it's a copyright issue. I don't know if it's an Irish Gaelic thing. Justin Gabriel got the biggest victory of his career, taking out the rated R superstar, your world champion Edge. Now, of course, he did it with everybody's help, but so far, your thoughts on this, before we talk about what happened last night on Raw, Maze, your thoughts overall so far on this, what many are calling NWO-like, with the yellow and black on Raw and this core group with Gabriel, Slater, Barrett, and Ezekiel Jackson. Overall, just a feeler for it. Liking this idea, or are you wishing that Nexus had imploded weeks ago and we're moving to something different?
I would have liked to have seen something different, but I'm sure a lot of people, including myself, when they saw Wade Barrett suddenly appear on SmackDown, it's like, okay, how long until half his flunkies join him and we have the Nexus on SmackDown? But, hey, they seem to want to love pushing this group, so, hey, go for it. I don't care anymore.
Are we possibly, I know, and we'll talk Royal Rumble in a few minutes, some of these NXT Season 2 cats that haven't made appearances lately, like Percy Watson and others, do you think some of these guys are going to be showing up on SmackDown to be in this core group? And it was weird to watch Monday Night Raw to see just four guys standing there against Punk and his Nexus or Second City Saints, Straight Edge Society, whatever these guys are called. And it harkens back, as I said, to the NWO of the late 90s, early 2001-ish, around the time that Goldberg got his championship and they split everybody off. I mean, these guys really need to get out of the classics library and go creative ideas, brand new ones, pretty please with sugar on top.
Well, I've always been a fan of, like, creative ideas, new ideas in pro wrestling. But hey, it seems to be the way the fans, they seem to love these types of core Nexus, you know, Second City Saints, Straight Edge Society, whatever groups. They love to point them out. Oh, it's the NWO, this year's version. Well, okay, WWE does it suddenly, everybody's loving it, TNA does it, and they crap all over it. And wrestling fans, stupid people.
Exactly, because as you said, everybody's going, oh, too many people in Immortal, too many people in this, it's a Four Horsemen ripoff. You know, as the line in Swingers goes, everybody rips off everybody else, so welcome to it. This Friday night, you will see, thanks to the results of what happened on Monday Night Raw, WWE champion The Miz teaming with Dolph Ziggler to take on a possibly one night, maybe more, reunited rated RKO group. Who knows? There's been rumors going that these guys may be back, maybe not back.
You have Randy Orton as a main event guy on Raw, Edge as a main event guy on SmackDown. It's not happening.
But you see these guys blending so much on shows. I mean, come on, Alberto Del Rio's been flopping over to the other show. Lake Cool showed
let's
up
not talk about Alberto
night.
Del Boro. I'm sorry, yeah, that guy has been shoved down our throat on every show for the past 3 to 4 weeks. I'm sick of seeing this guy on my television.
Yeah, but he's got such a great personality.
No, he doesn't. Hit him with a brick and he'd still talk like a retard.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I dig the ring announcer thing. I think the ring announcer's funny. I think Rodriguez does a really good job.
He was actually worth watching on NXT for some reason. I had the replay on, and I laughed my ass off at his antics. Going against El Rato, whatever the hell he is.
Spud Guy is joining us. Good evening, sir.
I like Del Rio. I think Del Rio's a good heel. He's a good fit.
He's fitting the mold on SmackDown right now, because who else do you got? But as you said, everybody obviously realizes he's an amalgamation of Ted DiBiase Sr. and JBL gone Hispanic, which when he goes into certain markets, if they do a tour of Spain or they go back to Mexico, South America, if Rey's out injured for the 33rd time, you could send Del Rio down there, and he automatically pops into that demographic. And as you said, Mace, and I don't know, Spug may disagree here, but as you said, he's being forced on the audience so much, it almost harkens back to the way WWF in the 90s shoved Dwayne Johnson on everybody about, oh, he's The Rock, he's a third-generation star, and you must love him and happy, and next thing you know, Die Rocky Die. I mean, you can't. It'll be hard to get Die Rocky Die type things from Del Rio, but
it's also the same thing that happened with John Cena, and started to happen with Brock Lesnar, and anybody that they're trying to put the Miz, anybody they're trying to push to become a megastar, they push them down our throats so the crowd hates them. And it actually kind of works because Alberto's already a heel. They push them down our throats so the crowd hates them, and then they slowly bring them up as a babyface. They'll do the same thing with Del Rio.
Honestly see Del Rio as a face somewhere? Really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's also a lot of people that said that about MVP or said that about Triple H back in the day. I mean, Bret Hart on Wrestling with Shadows documentary even said that, you know, no one will ever cheer for Triple H. And then you go, hey, look, DX, cool. Who knows?
Triple H is also one of the most beloved wrestlers of a generation.
Oh, of course, and we'll address your man crush in a couple minutes here.
Well, I'm not trying to bring up my man crush.
You're fine. No, I was going to bring him up in a few minutes, so it's good that you have him in everybody's mind. And bless you, my son. As we noted, Monday Night Raw was definitely interesting last night. Once again, Edge versus the Laptop reared its ugly head again. We had Edge take on WWE champion The Miz. Would have liked this match to have gone a little differently than it did, but Edge wins via DQ when Dolph Ziggler attacked. Randy Orton came out. Thoughts on Ziggler on commentary and Vicky? It was interesting, but if you could give him a grade on certain other stars we've had sit there. I mean, obviously he's better than Molina sitting there with like a mute, but he's not to the level of a CM Punk or JBL yet. And is he getting his feel, or is this possibly just a one shot at Royal Rumble to either one of you that we're going to see Ziggler in the main event? Do you think he's ready for prime time, or is this still a work in progress?
It's a work in progress, in my opinion. They'll build him up. He's not ready to be in the limelight for extended periods of time yet.
Well, Miz, let me ask this real quick.
But they did the same thing with The Miz. I mean, they tested the water with The Miz for a little bit, and then, you know, when he was ready, they put him out there for public consumption, so to speak. So, I mean, they're doing what they need to do to build new stars.
Let me ask this real quick, Mace. With or without Vicky, is he better as a character? Do you think Vicky hurts him being there, or Vicky is good in that she's because she's the acting general manager or special consultant, Dolph always gets what Dolph wants or Vicky wants.
I don't think she's really hurting him at this point in time. Like, if there's anything that Ziggler can actually do well is being a heelish character. Like, when he first came in, he was trying to be the babyface. Hi, my name is Dolph Ziggler. And that went over like a fart in church. And when they teamed him up with Vicky, all of a sudden he's becoming one of the more hated guys on SmackDown, which works for him.
So the rub works, so to speak.
Pretty much, but at the same time, I don't really know how to rate him on commentary, because as soon as I heard Vicky Guerrero, all of a sudden my TV got hit with the mute button.
A scandal heard by all. Many wish that a mute button was hit during the Divas match with Natty Neidhart defeating Melina. Apparently, Michael Cole made some interesting comments about the Divas champion's figure, and she took to Twitter and took it back at him. So if you find Natty Neidhart on Twitter, you'll read all the comments about that.
Hey, that was not bad. She proves exactly what Spug and I have been saying on Wrestle Talk Radio for a long, long time. She's proud of her figure, and so she
absolutely
should be. It's a very nice figure. But at the same time, can we give props to Melina? Oh my god. The flexibility of Melina should not be overlooked in that match, because that sharpshooter and then just folding Melina in half like a pretzel.
Was that intentional, or was that just a slip on Natty that she lost her footing and then got Melina Perez that flexible?
I don't know, but damn, it looked brutal, and I like it.
It almost looked like it.
Bad you have to blow off what could possibly have been a good Divas title match at the Royal Rumble for what we're getting.
That's right, kids. We're getting a rematch with Lay Cool versus Natty Neidhart. Why, oh why, oh why? That may change come Friday Night SmackDown. Who knows? We did get the great answer to which Bella will score with Daniel Bryan first. The answer is none, because apparently he's had Gail Kim as his girlfriend for the last 6 months. Which led to pushing, shoving, fighting, and all kinds of craziness. So we're happy that Gail got TV time. Oh, absolutely. Gail deserves to be used on the show. She's one of the better workers that you'll find in either promotion. Said that when she came to TNA back in the day as the arm candy to Jeff Jarrett and America's Most Wanted. She sat in the locker room while Teddy DiBiase, Maurice, and Alicia Fox had, a match. Because next thing I know, it turned around. I was like, what do you mean they're done? Defeating Daniel Bryan and the Bella Twins after the Bellas try to do the nookie-nookie with Daniel Bryan. Rumors are going that there will be a WWE Tag Team Championship match at the Royal Rumble. It has not been announced yet. Several teams are in the vying. Probably some form of Nexus. WWE Raw could be involved here since they defeated Kozlov and Morella last night. Possibly the Usos, who knows? Maybe a triple threat thing or something. Must bring up the more interesting setup of having Wade Barrett versus CM Punk as your main event on Monday Night Raw, with John Cena as the referee, and a match was stopped for, and I need to compose myself because this made me laugh. He called for a double DQ for use of excessive profanity. We're on a PG-rated show. This, of course, led the Raw general manager to stop things cold in their tracks, saying that everyone from the Nexus and the Core are in the Royal Rumble. Cena needed to apologize or he would be banished from the event. Yes, he said, I'm sorry. He also said, I'm sorry, with right hands to their jaws, which led to the Big Show and a ton of WWE superstars creating their own Royal Rumble in there. Did we throw the ball away by accident here in this setup? Would you rather see Spug Punk versus Cena on one of these upcoming Raws, or even at, I believe, February's Elimination Chamber? Or is there more legs in your mind as a fan of Barrett versus Punk and let Core versus Nexus go and do whatever they want to do for a couple weeks.
The Cena Punk, Cena Barrett, Nexus, Core angles played out. It's done. Leave it be. There's no reason to keep it going. And also this whole Core versus Nexus thing is played out.
Hmm. So just never have either faction ever touch again after Royal Rumble. Just wrap it up, move it on.
You'd be done with it.
Hmm. Disagree or agree, Sir Mace?
I disagree that the whole two factions warring off at the Royal Rumble would be a good moment. And they could probably find some way to extend it out to Mania. But as for things like either Barrett or Punk going up against Cena, yeah, that has been played out. Mind you, that being said, given the way that they did Raw with, like, okay, disqualification, both people are losers. GM chimes in, guess what? Both teams get to go in the Royal Rumble. Wow, way to make your main event pointless. And that was my opinion on most of Raw. It was pointless.
So for a go-home episode, it sucked. Go ahead.
About Raw in general.
Sure.
They need to take Michael Cole off commentary. 100%.
And do what with him specifically besides maybe flog him with a baseball bat or
something? Take him out the back, put a shotgun to his head and blow his brains out.
Either make him the GM and take him off commentary or get rid of this whole stupid, I'm going to be a heel for certain people and a baby face for others angle. It's BS.
That degree, it gets a little tiring after a while. That one minute he's arguing with Jerry Lawler, the next minute they're on a two-shot pubbing something. Like, consistency, hi, how are you?
No, listening to him last night when Lay Cool came out, he's sitting there bragging on Natty, and then, you know, 5 minutes later, he was talking about something else, who's a babyface and acting a complete babyface about it, and then he's talking about John Cena. He's like, oh, how could John Cena do this? This is blasphemy. It's like, dude, shut up. Just shut up. Nobody cares about your opinion. Nobody cares what you have to say on commentary. Everybody wishes that you would just shut your effing mouth and go away.
Well, as May said, we were talking off microphone before. I said it was weird to watch. He was watching Royal Rumbles before and said it was awkward to think about having a Royal Rumble without Jim Ross. Could Jim Ross maybe be one of the 40 entrants in the Royal Rumble, come right out of the ring and whip
Ross didn't do Michael the Rumble
Cole?
Last year.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just awkward to, as you said, and we had this conversation with David Marquez when he was here a couple months ago. The idea of a heel commentator is fine, but a heel play-by-play announcer is just very awkward. I know it's never been done, or maybe it hasn't. I'm not realizing it. And if I'm wrong, please, fans, let us know at radioandonlineworldofwrestling.com. It almost feels like, as you said, they're swimming in the ocean going, Raw General Manager, where are you? Where are you? Oh, crap, we're stuck here. Do we want Cole? Don't we want Cole? Well, I was with Michael Cole, but it's just ridiculous. Get it over and done with already.
Right. And the thing that bugs me is everybody's like, oh, it's hard to imagine this without JR. It's hard. JR hasn't been there for a couple of years now. He didn't do the Rumble last year. If I remember right, he didn't do Mania last year. Or he might have been there for like one match.
I don't remember.
I know JR was there for old school Raw, and that was it. The time of JR, while he was a great play-by-play guy and one of the quintessential voices in wrestling history, is gone. He's not there anymore. Let it go.
Someone who also isn't there is Chris Jericho. If you were counting on him being one of the 40 folks in the Royal Rumble, he told Pro Wrestling Illustrated that his contract has expired and moved on with life. Quote, I love the work I was doing. I think it was some of the best of my career. I never intended to re-sign again after coming back for that three-year period beginning in 2007. And after that three-year period ran out, there's other things just going on. That's it. No hidden agenda, no secret. People are waiting for the other shoe to drop, and there isn't another shoe to drop. He also reiterated that he would never work for TNA Wrestling. Quote, they've had the same rating for the last 3 years. It's just unacceptable with the amount of talent they have there. Just a business. I run my own business as well. I run the business of Fozzy. So, sorry if you were going, I got Jericho in my pool, dude. The field for this Mania is, as mentioned, there's 40 people. Raw, SmackDown, the kids from Superstars, the Nexus, the Core, possibly FCW guys. As mentioned, I'm definitely believing Triple H is one of the 40 just to jumpstart Triple H versus Sheamus to go to WrestleMania. Do we see Taker? Do we see Taker in this at all? Or is Taker just... Does he come in to set up the whole thing as rumored with Barrett? Who do you wish to be surprised people that you haven't seen in a while? First to Mace, then the Spug.
The Undertaker would be a hard one to place. I don't know whether you have him come into the Rumble or whether you just have him be a part thereof. I know Dim the Lights, have him come out, throw Barrett over the top rope, lights go out, he's disappeared again. I don't know, it's like, we were talking surprises, and you'll probably get your quote-unquote surprises, like your Jimmy Snookers or your Roddy Piper or something, but Spug actually hit the nail on the head on the guy that would be the ultimate surprise, at least for me, and that would be Shiggy Baby.
Oh,
the Iron Sheik hobbles to the ring, that would be, and he eliminates Santino Marella.
Oh, wow. Which reminds me, I need to get that review, that DVD out into the world. There's 40 people in this one, Spug. Can you pin down one or two that you go, that's my winner, I'm going with them? Because as we said, Triple H is probably back, and the rumors are it's Triple H, either Triple H versus Taker or Triple H versus Sheamus to do the whole full circle. But who makes it out of this pay-per-view in championship either way, and who would you like to see at Mania? If Edge keeps the belt or if Miz keeps the belt, or are we going to still see champion versus champion, winner take all at Mania?
Orton's going to win the belt. I really think that Orton's going to win the belt, because I don't think Vince has the faith in Miz as a name to draw to the Mania main event just yet. I think Orton's going to win the belt. Orton will carry it to Mania, and if Miz happens to walk out of the Rumble with the belt, he'll probably lose it at the Chamber to Orton or somebody. With regards to who wins the Rumble, I have no clue. This is one of those years that even with the number of entrants set aside, you can't pick. It's actually a wild card year. It's one of those years where I'm really interested in watching the Royal Rumble because you don't know who's going to win. There's so many good feuds going on that could lead into a championship match at Mania. My ultimate dream would be to see Taker come out, Triple H come out, and have those two either eliminate each other or get eliminated somehow. Get eliminated somehow by Sheamus and have a three-way setup at Mania between Sheamus, Taker, and Triple H.
Real quick, Mace, before we go to break, can you pin down one person that you want to see win the Rumble? Or are you like Mace? Are you like Spug? There's way too many people now that there's 40 to even say, that's my guy. That's who's winning.
Well, one, there's too many people, and they've only announced, I think at last count, was 24 out of the 40. So you don't even know the complete list of who's going in or how many surprises there's going to be or anything. Okay, Rock's saying 28 now. But as for the champions both retain, going by the fact that They're hyping Miz's loss too much, and they seem to be sowing the seeds for Miz versus Cena at Mania.
All right, we will. Our next guest, when we come back from break, may actually be one of the 40 people. We will talk to Brian Shields coming up on All in World of Wrestling Radio here on Queen Night. Be right back.
On Sunday, January 30th, 2011, the entire wrestling industry will converge to Boston, Massachusetts for the 2011 WRAs. It's the biggest public award show for the wrestling industry, and it only happens once a year. The voting booth is now open. Go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com to vote up to once per day for all of the coveted titles, such as Wrestler of the Year, Interview of the Year, Best Pro Wrestling Talk Show, Match of the Year, Hottest National Wrestling Babe, and many more categories. If you are in the wrestling industry and would like to participate in this year's festivities, either live or via Skype, for priority accommodations, please contact showdownnews@aol.com. We will see you on January 30th. For more information, please visit WrestlingRadioAwards.com.
Have a certain passion. Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio, or anything goes. Or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talk We Talk Live. All you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
Wild Talk Radio. Always imitated. No, that's about it. Always imitated.
What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
You are? No, you are. It's y'all.
Say again, y'all.
You are.
What? What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again, y'all.
For more great entertaining moments like this, please check out the Wild Talk Radio Network.
We swear we're not insane. At least they're not.
I'm Al Snow, former WWE superstar, tough enough trainer, and just all-around gadabout. When I want to talk or I want to listen to someone else talk, I go to wildtalkradio.com.
And welcome back to All I Will of Wrestling Radio. Wow, I feel like I want to go sword fight. That is Queen's Princess of the Universe, which is on the Highlander soundtrack and made it through four movies. I believe there was four, and there was a made-for-TV one, and then many seasons of Adrian Paul taking over the McLeod role. Spug and Mace joining us here as always. We're appreciative of them being here. Rick the Model Martel's pre-taped interview will be on in a few moments. However, if you live in New York City area and you're going, I want to do something Royal Rumble weekend, and you know St. John's isn't playing until noon against Duke on Sunday, and crap, what do? You need to go to the Franklin Square Library, which is at 19 Lincoln Road in Franklin Square. The doors will be opening around 1:30, and the presentation, or bell time, so to speak, is at 2 o'clock, because our next guest is Brian Shields. He is an author. He has written four books on World Wrestling Entertainment, including being a co-author of the ridiculously huge WWE encyclopedia, and he's going to be launching the first of his History of WWE Events. How did you first even come to be affiliated with that publication, and take some folks through what you did with it? Because as I said, it's a monstrosity of a book in a good way, but you're also sitting there going, God, there's so much knowledge here, I'm going to pass out from reading this thing.
Right. Well, hey, man, listen, thank you first and foremost for having me on. It's great to be here. You know, the WWE Encyclopedia, I describe it as a labor of love, because it was a huge project and something that myself and co-author Kevin Sullivan, not the taskmaster Kevin Sullivan, but the former WWE employee and writer Kevin Sullivan, we knew that this was going to be a historic event as far as when this book came out. A director at WWE named Dean Miller had the vision to create a WWE encyclopedia, and he went to DK Publishing, who has just a great history of making these kind of graphic, picture-based kind of books, and they wanted it to be the definitive guide. I mean, there was never a book created like this before to take you from the beginning of the company to 1963, you know, all the way up to, at the time, was present day, the beginning of 2009.
With the obvious 800-pound gorilla in the room, was there a hesitation by the organization to list Chris Benoit at all in the book due to the horrific nature of what happened to him and his wife, or what he perpetrated in 07. Did WWE say to you, okay, the Benoit thing, never, he's never here? Because he is in the book. I happen to see it today at a bookstore, and I'm flipping, going, hey, he's in there. I mean, wow. So were there handcuffs on you?
I mean, he's definitely in the book, and I know that not because I worked on it or paged through the book, but I wrote the entry.
Wow.
And, you know, as far as was there any hesitation from the company's standpoint, I don't know that, because I don't work for WWE, but I didn't know of any. You know, the book itself is, this is a celebration of WWE history. It's an homage, if you will, to the WWE, and to be historically accurate, we put him in the book, because he works for the company. So, that was the thinking of it at the time. I think it was for me to be the one, to write the entry, which was difficult for me because, you know, you have to be factual, and for years, I mean, Chris Benoit was one of my favorite performers from, you know, his days as Wild Pegasus in Japan, up through the, when I first saw him in WCW, in one of the pay-per-view tournaments in ECW, and then, up through the ranks, which everybody knows about. So It was just something that I wrote with great attention and sensitivity and care. You know, and that was all I tried to do.
WWE is going to be putting out in March, I believe, a History of WrestleMania DVD that will outline all the fun that went on with that event. But from doing your research for this book, and definitely fans, if you can find it and carry it, definitely get it. There's many stories about the birth of WrestleMania, how it was possibly funded with money from the Crockett's. Take us through what kind of stuff you found tidbit-wise on WrestleMania itself that the average fan may not know.
Well, I mean, just the story of WrestleMania is incredible. And that was one of the things that I loved about WWE and researching. I mean, listen, I'm a kid of the 80s. I was a shirt-tearing Hulkamaniac. So, you know, there was a lot of stuff from, you know, the mid and late 80s on that I maybe didn't know, and I had to recite. I couldn't recite it word for word, but, you know, I had kind of a general idea of what took place. But, you know, to learn about the company, whether it's early days from, you know, when Vince McMahon Sr. broke away from the NWA to form the company in 1963, or when, you know, Vince and Linda McMahon bought the company from Vince McMahon Sr., that, you know, that stuff was so interesting to me. And WrestleMania was, you know, what I found was really what's been described. I mean, it was a roll of the dice where the McMahons bet everything and put everything on the line to carry out this vision that the McMahons had of, okay, well, you know, the movie industry, the music industry, the theater, they all have their special day. You know, professional baseball, basketball, football, hockey, they all have their day. You know, WWE should have their one annual event that is all of that and more in one. And that was the thing that I found the most interesting because, you know, I mean, WWE before that was an incredibly successful promotion. I mean, it was a regional promotion, but I mean, and most people will tell you this. I mean, that was the place to be. I mean, you were either working for the Crockett's, in the NWA, in the Carolinas, or you were working for Vince McMahon in the Northeast. So, you know, for them to say, well, you know what, we're going to take this and make it bigger. We're going to make it better. And it's all going to be based on the success of this one event. From a business standpoint, I just found it fascinating.
Yeah, because it's already been there before. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Spug.
What do you think the fate of the WWE would have been? Set aside WrestleMania or the thought of it failing. What do you think the fate of the WWE would have been had they never taken the chance on Mania? Had they just gone about as business as usual? Would they have eventually done an event like Mania or would they have petered out in a few years?
That, you know, that's a great question. If I knew the answer to that, geez, I probably would have won the lottery years ago and paid off all my debt. but, you know, I think if it didn't happen, you know, I mean, Starrcade at that point was 2 years into its existence. So, I think if it didn't happen, it would have eventually happened, just because of the entrepreneurial spirit of Vince and Linda McMahon. I think the other scenario, if it happened and it failed, I think that WWE would have continued succeeding as a very powerful and, you know, the definitive promotion in the northeastern part of the United States, and probably because of that entrepreneurial spirit, they would have tried something again, is what I would think, would have happened. And, you know, I mean, and that, you know, and that's actually very interesting to talk about, and I would love to hear the thoughts of, you know, some of the Hall of Famers and legends when WWE does their roundtable discussions, to see what would have happened if either it didn't happen or if it failed.
Yeah, because it was always out there. The Crockett's, as you said, Starrcade 83 shut down Charlotte, North Carolina, so they had already had 84, and then would eventually have the 85 one, which I believe was the two-city one in Atlanta that had Magnum TA and Tully Blanchard and the I Quit thing, and the Von Erichs had already been doing the Star Wars Reunion Arena type show. So it is an interesting thing, Ryan, too. It would have possibly happened no matter what, because of all these guys coming in from the Crockett's and Texas and other regional promotions, that someone maybe would have gotten in Vince and Linda and Pat Patterson, who up Phil Zacco, Gorilla Monsoon, whoever was in Vince's ear at the time, going, you know, this could work. Because, I mean, they had the Wrestling Classic events. So, I mean, it would have been interesting.
Absolutely. You know, and a lot of people, and it's great because we were able to chronicle all the events and the match results in the encyclopedia. You know, WWE's first event was the Wrestling Classic, which, you know, one of my favorite Coliseum video releases was that event, and they called it WrestleVision on the front of the box. And, you know, I think though with WrestleMania, even though it was not, you know, technically the first pay-per-view or kind of wrestling mega event, I think what made it different, besides the fact that it was in the mecca of all arenas, Madison Square Garden, was you saw the difference right away in WWE and the McMahon's philosophy in the presentation. Mm-hmm. And that it was not just, we have a special referee in Muhammad Ali, which, I mean, I to me as a fan, that would have been well enough for me, you know. But if you think back and you look back at how that was presented as an entertainment event, I think that's what separated it right away from what the Crockett's and the Von Erichs were doing respectively. You know, which also, by the way, I don't want to take anything away from, because, you know, as a fan, I loved all of that. I mean, growing up in New York in the 80s with ESPN and cable TV, I mean, you know, during the week at 4 p.m. Eastern, we had, you know, AWA from Minnesota and the World Class Wrestling promotion from Texas. So we were watching that every day. So I loved all that stuff, and I remember those. I remember all those great events, but I think you saw right away with WrestleMania 1 that this was going to be very different.
Yeah, and go ahead. I was going to bring up a historical note that happened this weekend, actually, for fans that aren't aware of it. We've once again lapped the birth of Hulkamania that happened in 1984. Obviously, with this publication and in the annals of time, Hogan, even in his crippled state, unfortunately, in TNA, is always going to be a focal point when you talk WrestleMania, when you talk other WWE events. Imagine a world if Hulk Hogan never left the AWA and never came in 1984. Would the landscape have been even more changed, that you did this title switch and put the belt on the Iron Sheik after taking it off of Bob Backlund, and now you've got Sheik? Would you have liked to have seen a world without Hulkamania, or is it just that's another one that it was destined to happen in WWE, the merging of Hogan, McMahon, and the juggernaut that took off in the 80s?
Yeah, that's something that I've thought about from time to time, because of the impact of Hulkamania and really turning the corner to sports entertainment. And, you know, I'll even take that a step further, if I may. I mean, you know, what if when he quit, he never came back? I mean, part of what fans will read in the encyclopedia, and, you know, I wrote Hulk Hogan's entry, is, you know, there was a time where he quit the wrestling business altogether. And, you know, I think it was Terry Funk that was the one that talked him into going back. you know, I think, and, you know, to that point also is, you know, what if Bob Backlund never lost to Iron Sheik? Or what if he came back and won, and, you know, he became the real American? I mean, you know, I can't imagine that happening with anybody else, because, you know, Hulk Hogan is, you know, I mean, he's the icon of wrestling. There's no doubt about that. You know, and I think it was not only the time and the place, but, you know, it was the combination of the vision of the McMahons coupled with the vision and the ability to carry out the plan, you know, by Hulk Hogan. I mean, he had the look, he had the charisma, you know, and I think what a lot of people don't give him credit for, especially, you know, probably in recent years with, you know, a lot of the matches and performances being so scrutinized, is, you know, I mean, for a man of his size, he moved really well in the ring. I mean, if you look back at those matches and you see, you know, this guy's 6'7", over 300 pounds, you know, see how he's hitting the ropes and bouncing off the ropes. I mean, you know, he wasn't moving at a snail's pace. So I think it was, you know, a combination of those two things that led to that amazing success. So I can't picture it without that happening. I mean, what do you guys think?
We could go for an hour just on that alone, I'm sure.
Putting Hogan aside and the obvious individuals such as Pat Patterson and Briscoe aside, in the history of WWE, WrestleMania, whatever you want to go with it, I would say WWE in general, who was the most influential person other than those individuals with Vince in shaping the company into what it had become?
Well, I mean, I think in research, you know, in the research that was done, you know, and speaking to different people over time, I mean, you know, I like Gorilla Monsoon comes out in my mind. You know, people like Gorilla Monsoon, you know, Chief J. Strongbow, you know, I mean, Pat Patterson, deservedly so, gets a lot of acknowledgement. I mean, it's funny, you know, the Royal Rumble is right around the corner, and, you know, I mean, he's been heralded as that was his idea. You know, so, I mean, I think there are a lot of different people over the years that were very helpful in terms of, you know, bringing WWE to, you know, the various apex that it's reached since the 80s. You know, and then it's, you know, again, that entrepreneurial spirit of the McMahons to, you know, push the envelope and to give the fans what they want and to, you know, and do something, guys, that WWE has always done in create new superstars.
Ryan Shields is our guest here. He is the co-author of the Wrestling Encyclopedia that WWE published, I believe, in 2009 and is still selling like hotcakes. As mentioned, he will be at the Franklin Square Library, 19 Lincoln Road in Franklin Square. We'll give all his social networking information in a few moments here. Another risk that WWE took, and they've taken many in their years, was that first Royal Rumble and not doing it on pay-per-view, because the Crockett's did a Bunkhouse Stampede event at the Nassau Coliseum, if I remember right, that was, besides the Bunkhouse match itself, I believe it was Ric Flair defending against Road Warrior Hawk, and WWE, instead of doing pay-per-view with the initial Royal Rumble won by Hacksaw Jim Duggan, did it on USA Network and got killer ratings with it. The history of the Rumble itself, I mean, I believe if Jim Duggan was right in his History of 1987 DVD on the Kayfabe Commentaries series, mentioned that they had done the Rumble once before somewhere as a test bunny to see how it worked, But another situation of this is a gamble because people could have just looked at this thing in TV and went, yeah, I've seen this before, I'm out of here. But it turned into another staple pay-per-view, and now whoever wins it gets the shot at either the WWE champ or the world champ. So kudos again to the McMahons and Pat Patterson and creative, Brian, for getting something right.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. You know, and I got to tell you, I mean, you know, I mean, those bunkhouse events, I mean, Dusty Rhodes, you know, WWE Hall of Famer, the Bull of the Woods, I mean, you know, those were his matches, those were his specialties. You know, I mean, the Royal Rumble was very different. I mean, if you look at the number of competitors and that great format of people coming in at different times, I mean, I got to tell you guys, one of my favorite, to this day, one of my favorite Royal Rumble moments was, I believe it was the Royal Rumble in 1989, when numbers 1 and 2 were Axe and Smash.
Oh, yeah.
And they started going at it. And I remember being a kid at home, and my friends and I were stunned that we actually saw them fight each other. And you could hear it in the crowd. You could look in the crowd and see the shock and awe on people's faces. And I think the Royal Rumble has, I mean, its success speaks for itself. And as far as the experiment, you know, I mean, that's the great thing about doing live events and live entertainment. You know, that audience is a focus group. I mean, not to digress, but, you know, the King of the Ring has a similar heritage. So, you know, I think for the Royal Rumble to now, in 2011, be the event that it is, I mean, now, and this is, you know, not just recently, but, I mean, for everybody in the world to know that once January comes around, you're looking towards the Royal Rumble, and then that officially puts you on the road to WrestleMania. I don't care if you're working at WWE, if you're a fan, if you're writing books or working on the video games or the action figures, video game accessories, whatever it is. I mean, you get pumped up. This is a great time of year.
As you mentioned, that Rumble with Axe and Smash, always a memorable one. The other memorable ones include Ric Flair sticking it to WCW in Albany, going, oh, yeah, I'm coming in number 3, Jack, and I'm staying all the way to the end. And then you had the setup to get at that WrestleMania, which was in Indianapolis. You also had the Sid Justice, Hulk Hogan thing come out of that. And it's amazing to look at the annals and the history of this event and realize Stone Cold Steve Austin, of all the people, has won the most Rumbles. Hulk Hogan only won, I think, it was 2 Rumbles, maybe?
He won 2.
Yeah, and it was a launching pad for certain characters. Go back to the 94 Rumble, and Kevin Nash as Diesel was laying guys out like crazy, and then I believe Kane is the record holder with 11 eliminations by himself. So you could possibly, at this event, establish someone, and they could make their bones, so to speak, in the Royal Rumble and carry on. Or you could have Santino Marella with 0.1 seconds or whatever it is that he lasted.
Yeah, right.
The Warlord record finally went away. It was like, gone! Thank you!
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's another thing that makes the Rumble so great is, you know, you never know what's going to happen. You never know who's going to emerge. And one of the things that I really love is, you know, now, the last few years, it seems like there have been so many surprises, you know, people coming through that curtain that you would never expect to make their return to WWE, whether that's for, you know, the long term, short term, or the real short term, just that one night. And, you know, it's funny, you talk about the, you know, past Rumbles, you know, that 92 Rumble probably had the greatest collection of superstars and future legends and Hall of Famers of all time. It's a testament to the event and the people that perform in it.
With this book, for fans that aren't aware of it, as mentioned, you're not a WWE contracted employer when you did this book. but how much day-to-day interaction and how long was the actual process first from point A, okay, guys, you're going to do this book with all the research? Was it multiple years, 1 year? And how much was Vince, Stephanie, Linda, Shane over your guys' shoulders going, that doesn't belong in there, or, you know, please emphasize this? How much hands-on were they with you guys?
Well, I have to say, first and foremost, we worked as a team on this for well over a year, probably about 15 months. You know, we would have Kevin and I would have weekly conference calls with DK Publishing. And I have to tell you guys, WWE was fantastic to work with. You know, I've been fortunate enough to write 4 books on World Wrestling Entertainment, and, I mean, they've just been fantastic to work with. They've always been very good to me. You know, they gave us a lot of creative freedom, and a lot of input on not only what should be in the encyclopedia, but how it should look and how it should be presented. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, this is a WWE product, so they do have a final approval, which, you know, is not unreasonable. Again, you know, it is their product, but, you know, it was really a very kind of a free-flowing environment as far as if you have an idea, you know, let's talk about it, let's hear the idea, and if it can work, okay, well, you know, make it work.
Now, when you were writing this book and going about through the history of the WWE, was there anything that the McMahons or WWE said, hey, we really don't want you to put that in there?
Gobbledygooker.
No. I mean, nobody ever told me anything about not putting this person in or not saying this or not saying that. And, I mean, none of that was ever discussed or communicated. And, you know, I mean, that was the thing was, you know, I mean, we wanted it to be, you know, very creative, and we wanted it to be groundbreaking as a book. But at the same time, it has to be factually accurate. It has to be correct. I mean, it's an encyclopedia. So I think we all were, no pun intended, on the same page in that regard. And you know, the final product speaks for itself. I mean, we're all very proud of it. I mean, this March, it'll be out 2 years. People are still talking about it. You know, luckily, you know, the fans and everybody have been very happy with it. But, and I think that's why. I think because, you know, people that maybe fans didn't expect to see in the book are in there. Or maybe they didn't expect someone to have such a large entry, and they do. You know, because it was based on fact.
Now, you're doing your presentation this Sunday. Saturday,
yes,
at the Lincoln Library in New York. It's a multimedia presentation. Are you going to be showing matches? Is it just clips? Is it, you know, you have audio interviews? What all is going into this presentation that the public is going to see?
I show a little bit of everything. There's something in there for everybody. Actually, before I come out, I run matches from the best of 2009 to 2010 DVD, just to, you know, kind of get the crowd pumped up and in the mood, if you will. And then my presentation is a combination of PowerPoint images that, you know, thankfully, from special permission for WWE, I'm able to use. And then also, through their special permission, DVD footage from their home video library. So, you know, I take fans on a trip through time, and the WWE Encyclopedia is my guide. I take them through the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, all the way up to today. And there's a little in there for everybody, and that's why I think these have been so well received. And I mean, it's just so much fun for me. I mean, during the Q&A session, which is after the historical overview, you know, I mean, I'll get a question on Bruno Sammartino, and 5 minutes later, I'll get a question on Randy Orton. I mean, it's just it's that kind of an event, and it's just they've just been great.
From the book, and also from what we see at WrestleMania weekends, we're once again going to go through a Hall of Fame class. Twofold setup here. We talked about a few weeks ago that they had put some feelers out to certain cities, Orlando, I think, Carolina, somewhere in New York, Vegas were mentioned. Would you, as a fan, forget that you were involved in the book, as a fan, would you like to see a physical World Wrestling Entertainment Hall of Fame building? And then I'll ask my second one in a second.
Absolutely.
Where would you put it? Would you like it to be in Stamford at WWE headquarters, New York, next to Madison Square Garden? Where would you put it?
I have to well, selfishly, I'd like it in New York, so it's more convenient for me to go to and see it all the time. But, you know, I think for me to really answer that, I would need to see what the idea is for it. I mean, because in all seriousness, you know, you need a certain, especially for something like WWE, you know, you need a certain amount of space to accommodate a Hall of Fame for a company that has been around and has been groundbreaking since day one. And that's the thing, but I think wherever it would be, I think it's just, it has to do the WWE justice. I think that's the biggest thing.
Right. The second part, obviously, you mentioned the multi-year world champion Bruno Sammartino, and obviously
Absolutely.
Due to personal issues that he's had with Vince McMahon Jr. over the years, in our lifetime, we may not see him actually in this hall. But besides him as the obvious, if you were sitting with Vince and whoever's in charge of this thing, and they're going, all right, who from our roster, WWE, even from the Crockett's, from wherever, who, 2, 3, 4, maybe the entire class of this year, who would you like to see go in? Because we've had our favorites we've talked about over the last few weeks leading up to this, but who that's not there should be there and why? Obviously, Bruno should be there. Give us a few more besides Bruno.
I think, yeah, I mean, without a doubt, Bruno should take his rightful place. You know, I think, you know, there's so many that are kind of coming into my mind just because they were my personal favorites. So within seconds, I'm trying to be objective.
Randy Savage, maybe?
You know, I mean, absolutely, Macho Man is a WWE Hall of Famer. You know, to me, there's no doubt about that. You know, and I think it's been great that the WWE has opened it up to people that, you know, did not necessarily perform in WWE. You know, I'd love to see Sting in the Hall of Fame. I'd love to see, you know, the original Tiger Mask and Great Muta from Japan, just because of the influence that they've had, on professional wrestling and the influence that they've had to, you know, superstars for years. You know, I mean, there are so many. I mean, I would love to one day see, as a group, the Four Horsemen inducted into the Hall of Fame. You know, I think it would be great to have Lou Fez in the Hall of Fame. I think that down the road, I think fans are going to see more of those types of inductees that, you know, that are deserving of the honor. I mean, like, I never thought as a kid that one day Vern Gagne would be a WWE Hall of Famer, you know, and I was lucky enough to be at WrestleMania last year and the induction ceremony. I mean, for Gorgeous George to be in the WWE Hall of Fame, I think is awesome. you know, and, you know, another name comes to mind, Mil Máscaras. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of names that come to my mind, and that just as a fan, I hope that one day they're able to take their spot.
Because WWE owns essentially the entire classic library of video footage from the NWA, the AWA, and territorial days, would you like to see them drop the WWE from the Hall of Fame and actually make it into a wrestling Hall of Fame, a legitimate wrestling Hall of Fame?
When you say legitimate, do you mean just like WWE kind of presents the Hall of Fame, or?
Yes, as in it's no longer, because up until a couple of years ago, it was exclusive to, you know, WWE former talent.
You're kind of making it sound like, you know, how it's called the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame or the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
The NFL Hall of Fame, I think, exactly. Except there's no representation of Canadian football in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
They don't,
which
start
is
with
odd.
Tim's been quiet tonight. Don't rattle the chain.
But, but, you know, I mean, would you like to see that? I guess legitimate is the wrong word. But it's along the same lines.
Mm-hmm. You know, I guess short answer, no. Or maybe I don't. To me, the biggest thing is who is inducted. I mean, if you go down the line, and this is something that I learned by researching for the encyclopedia. I mean, there really aren't too many that never ever set foot in a WWE ring. I mean, even when, you know, I mentioned Vern Gagne, I mean, there were a couple of occasions where he did, you know, he may not have had a WWE career per se, but he did step through the ropes, you know, as did Lou Fez on a couple of occasions. I think to me, the most important thing is who is inducted into it. But I see your point also as far as, you know, if it's a WWE Hall of Fame, you know, should there be people in there that never, you know, competed in WWE or does it make?
I hate the fact that it's named the WWE Hall of Fame. I want to see people like Vern Gagne and the Crockett's and Lou Fez and, you know, for example, Manny Fernandez, the Road Warriors, individuals that had their careers, Mil Máscaras, Black Tiger, Jushin Thunder Liger, people who had their careers everywhere but the WWE.
Which brings up Sting, obviously. He's the biggest name who never, and when we say never, we mean never, ever got anywhere near an organization. And it brings up something else, and I'm sorry to cut Spug off, but we've had this talk on here before, because a lot of folks work for TNA, whether he's under a contract or not to TNA, could you see that kind of thing happening, where even though he works for TNA, Vince going, it's in Atlanta, I gotta have Steve Borden in this thing, whether he's here for the one night or not, screw you, Dixie Carter, I want Sting. Could that happen?
I don't,
or is it never, ever, say never type thing?
Yeah, I don't know if that could happen. I mean, you know, legally, I don't know if it could happen if someone is under contract to another company. I don't know if Sting is under contract to TNA or not. We don't know. I don't know that.
We don't even know. It's like one of the great mysteries of the world. We're all sitting there going, hey, Main Event Mafia is sort of coming. Nash is going, nah, I'm going to be at WrestleMania weekend, but I'm talking to TNA. I mean, it's one of those things. Like you mentioned the Horseman thing. Do you induct, is it Ole, Arn, Tully, and Rick, and JJ, or do you throw Barry Windham in there? Do you throw Pillman in there? I mean, that's one of those, there's so many units to the Horsemen, or do you just do it like, okay, the Horsemen themselves, and even Paul Roma gets to come in, boys?
Right. I mean, I think,
DVD, they don't like each other too much.
Yeah. I think, and by the way, my bad for not including the Road Warriors on my initial answer, especially since I worked with those guys years ago, and they're the greatest tag team of all time. You know, and another name just quickly, Wahoo McDaniel. But, you know, I think for the Horsemen, I think it's got to be the original, because without them, you don't have the others. I think that the group with Barry Windham, was just fantastic. Barry Windham is, you know, one of my all time favorite wrestlers, whether he was in WWE or the NWA/WCW. But, you know, I think the other thing too, guys, that makes it difficult and really a fun discussion is, you know, because there are, you know, it's an agreement. It's not like professional sports where, okay, well, you know, here this is happening. You know, it's an agreement between WWE, you know, and the talent, and that's what makes it a little bit unique in that way. But you know, at the end of the day, it's a great discussion and a fun debate, you know, for fans to have. And I love talking about it. I love thinking, every year, who's going to be inducted? Who's going to get snubbed? You know, I mean, it's a lot of fun.
Well, that brings up the Four Horsemen brings up an interesting debate and caveat. Do you do it like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you induct the group? And is it time to start inducting groups and tag teams?
Because, well, they've done that every year. There's, at some point or fashion, Spug, there's been a tag team. You had the Blackjacks, you had the Briscoes, you had the Funks go in as a duo when they probably could have gone in solo.
That's recently. You weren't inducting tag teams 15 years ago. You weren't inducting full groups 15, 20 years ago. They were doing the most famous individual out of that group. Mm-hmm. And when you have teams like the Road Warriors, you have groups like the Four Horsemen, who were so influential, and it's spread throughout the wrestling world. And it brings up another interesting question. This is in Atlanta. Do you induct the NWO?
Ooh.
Because that was an extremely influential group.
But to go to Brian for the second there, if you go with what Spug's saying, now you run into another logistical issue, because Hogan is still a contracted TNA star, and Nash maybe not be. Scott Hall does stuff down here in Florida for some local promotions, so he's available. Then you also run into then you got to bring Eric Bischoff in, because if it weren't for Eazy-E, you wouldn't have had the NWO. I mean, do you like the idea of this possibly being a situation with the Hall of Fame where, okay, we're in Atlanta, we'll do WCW thing. If we go to Texas like we did a couple years ago, we'll do whoever. If we ever go back to Seattle, we'll do all the Pacific Northwest people. Is that what we might possibly see from this thing?
Well, I mean, just again, speaking as a fan, I mean, I think that stuff is really cool. You know, I really do. You know, when things can be done in, you know, kind of its hometown, or, you know, home territory, if you will. But I do think there's a balance. I think that there's a point where that's talked about too much. Mm-hmm. And it becomes like, okay, well, you know, there is a business element to it also. And I mean, listen, the NWO is probably, you know, one of my favorite, probably second favorite, you know, or third favorite groups of all time. I would love to see that one day, you know, the original, you know, three specifically, you know, get inducted. You know, but I think that with some of the names that, that we're talking about, it would be great for it to happen in Atlanta, but it's not a requirement. And I think that's the difficult part of it is, you know, if somebody is under contract to another company, you know, they can't, I mean, unless they're able to get out of that contract, I would think they're not able to, you know, to do something, but, you know, but I don't know.
Unfortunately, we're going to let you go, but we will, if you're listening going, we want him back. Yes, he will be back. We will try to get Brian to commit to us at some point to come back, be it maybe around WrestleMania time. The event is at the Franklin Square Library, 19 Lincoln Road in Franklin Square, New York. The zip, if you're going to Google it or MapQuest it or whatever, is 11010. You are popular on the Twitter and other social networking areas. I know you're on Facebook, but give the folks your Twitter name so they can follow you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you very much. You know, the Twitter name is actually under my company. I have a marketing and copywriting consultancy called Mighty Pen and Sword. So people could see me at www.mightypenandsword.com. They could follow me on Twitter, at MightyPen_Sword, and I'm on Facebook as well.
All right. Stay with us for a second. Coming up after the break, Spug and I had the honor this afternoon of sitting with the model Rick Martel. If you thought George Animal Steel was fun, the model Rick Martel's got nothing on him. All on World of Wrestling Radio, we will be back.
Rockin' world go round.
This is Mace, the overworked co-host of WrestleTalk Radio, OWW Radio, Otaku Talk Live, the offside producer, Cindy's cleaning boy, building janitor, advertising guru, Spug's bong holder, drink runner, Omega's transformer record keeper, and bashing the books, all here on WildTalkRadio.com. If you decide to listen to a show that features a bit of the old-fashioned ultra-violence, people getting their heads kicked in, bones broken, and bloody crazy fights, then come on over and listen to Tap Outs to Knockouts live in the archive section of WildTalkRadio.com.
Mace, it's not all about the bloody stuff and the ultra-violence. Hey, this is Spud from Tap Outs to Knockouts. And if you want to hear the news, results, the technical side of MMA, then check us out on WildTalkRadio.com in the archive section. And oh yeah, we do have the bloody stuff.
And now I know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Hey! What are you guys doing in here? Get back to sweeping.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene. All this and more can be found on one site. Hero says, whenever they wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley,
plus the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talents today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage,
Mark Berry,
Panic McDowell,
Christy Hemme,
Jay Lethal,
Yesterday,
Brett the Hitman Hart,
the Sergeant Slaughter,
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man,
Paul Hogan, the quickest of all time,
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman,
and tomorrow,
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart,
Harry Smith, Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site to throw juice. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Hey everyone, Johnny Cashmere here, host of Life is Callous right here on Wild Talk Radio. If you have not checked out my live show yet, then you really have to do so. Okay, I'm a pro wrestler, and we do talk, you know, pro wrestling on my show a little bit, but we also talk with a lot of other people too. It's like a who's who of the celebrity world. Guests such as the Reverend Bob Levy from the Howard Stern Show, two-time Emmy Award-winning star John Wesley Shipp, Dr. Robin Zazio of A&E's hit show Hooters, comedian Andy Dick, and many more stars added each and every week. If you missed an episode, check it out in the archives and podcasts right here on Wild Talk Radio.
Become a smaller man, the bad lives keep flashing. The look with my keep on dancing with the clowns. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So pick me up on the town. Yeah, yeah. Roll your clowns. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So pick me up on the town. Hey, you, go. Wild Talk. Wild Talk. You want Wild Talk? This is George the Animal Steel. Hey, you go. Bye bye.
Welcome back to our second hour of Online World of Wrestling Radio here on Queen Night, and we've had some arguments over the greatest Queen songs and not. You have three CDs of greatest hits, people hard to pick stuff, so welcome back to the Wild Talk Radio Network. Get your Royal Rumble predictions into us at radio.onlineworldofwrestling.com. And it's kind of fitting that a year ago this gentleman was on this program. I was not a part of the program at the time. So he has graciously joined us here for our fourth or fifth week. I'm already losing track. I believe it's our fourth week of WrestleMania
fourth.
Memories.
Spug
joining us here for this one. Mace will be back in a little while. Made his WrestleMania debut at a WrestleMania that we've already talked about in the history of WrestleMania. It's a WrestleMania 3. He is not one, not two, but a three-time WWF/WWE Tag Team Champion. He's held regional championships all over the globe, and I really mean all over the globe. And, of course, if you're a fan of 80s wrestling, you also knew him for a short stint in the old AWA. He is the one and only Model Rick Martel. We want to first thank you for being here and sending over the Arrogance clone, which has been sprayed everywhere upon your request. So we are in full Arrogance mode for you, and hopefully the odor and ambiance of the show is to your liking.
Well, remember, Alan is Pug, Arrogance is not just a fragrance, it's a way of life. I thought I'd throw that in for you guys.
Thank you so much. I'm a fan of wrestling from all eras, and thanks to DVD, WWF in the late 90s, early 2000s had a TV series on called WWE Tough Enough, where they had the young kids and showing them in the house. One of the nights they had one of your former tag partners and road buddies, Pat Patterson, over for dinner. And
in the
outtakes of the Pat Patterson stuff, they asked him about some legendary ribs or road stories. And Spug may later will ask you about locker room ones but this hopefully this jogs your memory. He starts the story about how when we drove around in the day, we would have guys, you know, we would moon guys, we would throw eggs at cars. It's just, so this really young guy named Rick Martel is traveling with us and doesn't speak almost a lick of English. And I get him to strip down to his underwear and get in the back of a car. And he goes into this story. Does this ring any bells for you at all, having Pat Patterson play ribs on you like this?
No, Pat, you know, played some ribs, but not this one, though.
Yeah, he proceeds to go along about that he honks the horn and you are to pop the trunk open and moon someone. And they apparently were pulled over by the state troopers and honked the horn. And here's Rick Martel's tush for everyone in the state trooper's office to see.
No, I'm afraid Pat probably messed up the name.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm afraid, Alan, it wasn't me. It sounded good, but it wasn't me.
For fans that aren't aware of it, where did the name itself, Rick Martel, come from? Because the first thing I got from people in my email account was, hey, ask him about his sister Sherry, and I'm like, that's not his real last name. Was the Martel name given to you? Did you come up with it? What were your initial dealings with the name itself?
Well, I had a brother, Michel, who was in wrestling, you know, before I was, and He had the experience of trying because my real name is Vigneault, and the way it is written, you know, people would call him Vignold or Vigold, you know, every which way, you know, the name was mentioned except the right way. So he decided early on to change his name to Martel. It is a French name, easy to pronounce, and you know, so when I came in I as his brother, I took the name Martel, which later on was a good thing, because you know, when I make some calls, business calls, or you know, reservation at restaurants or whatever, you know, I used that name Vigneault, and nobody would know who the hell I was, so it turned out to be all right.
Now, for fans that aren't aware of it, you've wrestled everywhere, and I was not kidding. You wrestled in New Zealand. You wrestled for the Pacific Northwest Territory.
All over.
When you first started out, thanks to your brother being in the business, was that a blessing for you, or did that kind of hinder you when you went to go to territories like Pacific Northwest?
No, it was a blessing for me because, of course, you know, I lost my brother, you know, wrestling, in fact, in 1978 after a wrestling match in Ponce, Puerto Rico. I started in 1973. So I had my brother as a mentor and an advisor and a best friend, somebody I could count on for advice for the first 5 years of my career. So it really helped me out, you know, because my brother was all... you know, he was pretty good business-wise, and he had a great wrestling mind, and so, of course, I could always count on him. And of course, the downside, you know, when I lost him in 78, my world came tumbling down, you know. I mean, it took me a few months to recuperate from that because it was hard, very hard for me. I was 21 years old at the time, and it was tough.
What were the circumstances of his passing? Was it ever known to the general public? Was it an injury? What happened to him?
Yeah, well, it was a mixture of that night. You know, of course, it happened in Puerto Rico. And when I was in Atlanta, in fact, I was wrestling in Atlanta in 78, you know, with Tommy Rich and all. And I got a call right in the middle of the night on a Friday night and saying that my brother had an accident. And I needed to get down to Puerto Rico right away, so I took a flight in the morning, and I asked over the phone, I said, what kind of accident? And they wouldn't tell me, and finally, I demanded it, and then they told me he died. And when I got there, of course, everybody, you know, a lot of they speak Spanish, and I couldn't understand a word. And I went to the hospital, and from what I understand, a main artery busted, you know, and I guess he ate at the... He had some food later in the day, early before the match, you know, and And he was caught in a match where his tag team partner was out, carried out of the ring, and he had to wrestle two guys at the same time, and it was too much for him, and busted.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was horrible, and it was a tough thing for me to keep going, afterwards.
Did you ever contemplate stepping away completely from the business and going, I can't do this without my brother here?
Yeah, well, I flew in, my brother's body back home, and of course all my family, especially my mother, she didn't want me to go back in wrestling, and I stayed here a couple of weeks, and I explained to her, that Michelle paved the way for me, and that would be the worst thing I could do is quit, and it was tough for them, but me, there was never any question, no doubt in my mind that I had to keep going, for his memory.
And you did keep going quite successfully, I might add. You were part of a very underrated and influential tag team and a bitter feud with your tag team partner in the early 80s. With Tito Santana and Strikeforce.
Yeah.
Now, I will honestly say that is probably, I was really young, so I've had to go back and watch a lot of it. But what's it like being in the ring with a Hall of Famer like Tito, and might I add, I haven't looked at the roster lately, but I'm pretty sure if you're not in there, you should be, sir.
Absolutely. We're voting for you if we had a
yes.
say.
But what's it like, working with Tito and going through? Because you guys were to look back at what Strikeforce had done and to see it, 20-some-odd years later, 30-some-odd years later, in tag teams that form today, I don't think your guys' influence is rated properly amongst the great tag teams.
Yeah, well, I think the reason being is that we're a tag team. Weren't a tag team that long, considered an influence. We did some great things too with Tito and I as a tag, Tito was great to be tagged with him, and also great to wrestle against him, because when I switched, we had a feud for a few months, and it was fantastic. I really enjoyed that. Tito was an ultimate professional in and out of the ring, and we still keep in touch to this day. In fact, I will be with him later on this year in Germany, and I love Tito, so that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that tag team with him. The reason we parted is that I had been at this point, that point, 15 years as a babyface, in the wrestling, and I started early, very early, same age, 73. So in 88, I said, it's time for me to change. And I went to see, Vince, about the idea of me switching heels. And his first reaction was no way, and of course I had a talk with Tito about that, and he respected my decision, and he thought, said, hey, go for it, brother, I'm behind you. Of course, later on we did that, at WrestleMania 5, where we did the switch there. But as a babyface, I'd been there, I was AEW champion for 19 months, and like you said, Alan, earlier, I'd been all over, Singapore, New Zealand, Australia, all over the States, Canada, so I needed a change in my career, to make things, I needed a challenge, creative challenge for me, and I was glad I did it, because being the model helped me, finish my career, on a positive note, where I could come to the ring with a great motivation, and I was really happy I did that.
You, after Strikeforce, had a real long feud with Tito.
Yeah.
And one of your matches took place at the 89 King of the Ring tournament. Seeing what they've done to the King of the Ring tournament, because by all accounts, what I've watched, what I've read, what I've learned, that the King of the Ring actually was a tournament that meant something.
She did.
Does it bother you now that the King of the Ring is nothing more than a shtick on Monday Night Raw once a year? Coming from someone who was in the finals to be crowned King of the Ring?
I have no judgment on whatever is going on now in wrestling because, you know, it's another time now, and they do whatever they have to do to make it successful or try to make it successful. So it's like us in the 80s. I remember that because I started early 70s. I remember old-timers, you know, from the early 70s would come and see me in different towns then, and they'd say, oh, man, what is this thing they're doing with wrestling, all the gimmicks and all this thing, you know. They couldn't believe it, you know. And so I'm not going to, pass judgment, you know, on what's going on in wrestling today. It's just different times, and that's it. And, of course, I remember, back at WrestleMania 3 and those years where you only had 4 pay-per-views a year, you know, and to me, I was exciting every time a pay-per-view would come, you know, and all that. Now they have one every month, and I don't know, it works, I guess, all I know is that the guys are doing their best to entertain still, and they out there risking their body and to do their best to entertain, and I think the fans are the winner here.
I know you don't want to pass judgment, and that's not what I'm asking, but coming from four to six pay-per-views a year to now, 12 or more a year, did it offer a better payoff for storylines and programs between wrestlers when you only had a limited number of pay-per-views a year, a better payoff for the fan?
For the fans, you mean?
Yes.
I think, it's like, I'm sure. I think so. I think that the fact that you're looking forward to something, you know, there was a build-up involved, about a three-month build-up to a pay-per-view. So, of course, you could build up stories, and then finally, wow, the climax, here it is. You know, everybody was, even among the wrestlers, I remember the excitement in the dressing room. Hey, next week the pay-per-view, great, and we're all excited, because we've been waiting for it for almost 3 months, and now here it is. And, I think... I liked it better this way myself,
During your stay in the original Worldwide Wrestling Federation, you were under the tutelage of Vince Sr., and then Phil Zacco was there for a little while, Gorilla Monsoon, Arnold Skolin, and then to come back almost seven years later, it had to be night and day to go from this regional run Vince Sr. and Vince McMahon Jr. as your commentator to come back in 87 when you partnered with Tom Zenk. Did you just walk into this company going, I never would have imagined this 7 years ago when I was here with Tony Garea to walk into this and 93,000 people in a building?
Absolutely, Alan. I mean, big difference, a different world altogether. And I think, me having lived both regime is that, in the early 70s, you had all the regional territories, all the little cliques, then having gone to WWF, Vince McMahon's empire, I think, Vince McMahon did a great thing for wrestling. I mean, and for wrestlers, I can tell you that, because in all regional places, guys with their families had to move, from one place to the other. And now, in the 80s with Vince, we could raise our kids or have our families in one place, and we'd take planes ourselves and do the moving around ourselves. And we made much, much better money also. So I think it was a great thing that Vince McMahon came around in the wrestling world. But it was very different. It was, television. I remember, the TV program was just, one handheld camera and one still camera. And now here you go, you know, you had a big production thing, you know, it was fantastic, the vignettes, you know, and it was all exciting, very, very exciting, but very demanding also, you know. We used to go like 32 days in a row on TV, and then you had weekends where you'd wrestle Saturday afternoon in Los Angeles, and then rush to the airport, and then wrestle that night in San Francisco. Then the next day, Sunday afternoon, you wrestle in St. Louis, then get off, get on the plane right away and wrestle in Chicago that night. You know, I mean, your body just was run down. I mean, it was unbelievable. But it was exciting to be part of it, nevertheless.
Now, between the WWF stint and your World Wrestling Federation return in 87, you worked for the Minnesota-based Vern Gagne AWA outfit.
Yeah.
What was the differences in that product? Because at that time, I believe 84 to 80, in the 80s, you had them in a new channel called ESPN. So there was that, I believe it was on during the afternoon. And to go back to WWF, what was it like to work with Vern Gagne at that point? Because he had the WWF breathing on him, and then you also had the Crockett's rising up too, so the pressure was on and with Vern Gagne. Was it a different mindset to work for him and eventually go to WWF? What was the AWA situation like for you, especially someone who was walking into a promotion that had, at the time, I believe, Jumbo Tsuruta was the world champion, and then you had Stan Hansen around for a while, and like Bockwinkel, a young Kern Hennig, a very young Scott Hall. What was the AWA experience like for you?
Oh, well, as far as promotion goes, it was completely different. I mean, it was not the same at all. You know, Vern had the old ways of, you know, the 60s and the 70s, and Vince had the, you know, the future ahead. You know, he had a vision and all that. And so in that sense, it was very different. And also I remember, you know, they couldn't believe what was going on with wrestling, and they were just trying their best to counter it. You know, I remember that that Pro Wrestling USA, where they, you know, mm-hmm. the Crockett's and all the different promoters, you know, try to get together to try to go against Vince, you know, and we went to the Meadowlands and different places, you know, and try to go head on with Vince, against Vince, and these guys, I remember, you know, the first night we went out to eat, all the promoters and myself and Ric Flair and all that, and I remember different ideas, guys, different promoters were going, oh, yeah, we're going to do this, and we have to do this. Everybody's going, yeah, yeah, you know, and I'm going, wow, it's exciting. I think it's going to work. And but sure enough, as, you know, everybody, once that we left that night, everybody's trying to, you know, pull the plug for them and trying to, you know, what was said at that table that night, nothing kept, was kept, you know, nobody kept their promise, so we all, you know, it failed for that reason. If they would have stuck together, maybe it would have had a chance to succeed. But Vince had a serious plan. I mean, he was. You have to give him credit. I mean, this man is unbelievable what he accomplished.
You just brought up Vince being the future, and I kind of want to flash forward to the future a little bit in sort of the past. 91. In the 90s, you came back to WWF, and you were the model, which, interestingly enough, was a J.J. Dillon idea, and I must say, excellent idea.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was a...
But I want to ask you about a very influential and ahead-of-its-time match in a feud that you had with Jake the Snake Roberts, who is arguably one of the great ring psychologists in the history of the business, and you are no slouch in that department. But when you get into that ring and you're surrounded by thousands of fans in L.A. at WrestleMania 7, and the referee comes up and puts that blindfold on you, that hood, you know, watching the match over and over again in later years, it's amazing the way you two worked in that ring. that I don't know if you could have seen in that hood or not. I don't know if it had holes in it or like the real black grating so you could see or breathe. But what was it like to be in that match? To listen to the crowd and work that? I mean, was it extremely difficult? Did you guys have a plan going out? You know, I mean, what was that like?
Well, it was nerve-wracking. I mean, especially, you know, when you're doing live television, live pay-per-view, I mean, you want to get things right, and it was difficult to see through that blindfold. We could see a little, but it was very difficult, you know. And so, therefore, you know, a few weeks ahead, as the time was getting closer to that event in L.A., I asked if we could have a trial at it, you know, somewhere. And we had in West Palm Beach, we had a match of blindfold, against Jade, because I didn't want to go in L.A., WrestleMania 7 with the, because I guess Jake had it, had tried it before, so he knew what he was in for, but not me. So I tried it, and of course I made some adjustments and made sure I didn't do certain things a certain way, and so I was really happy with the results. I tell you, I was really relieved at the end. I was very happy with it.
Now, when you're in that type of match and you're in that type of situation, wrestlers a lot, and I you know, going through their school and training a long time ago, learned this, you rely on facial expressions a lot to sell pain, anguish, you know, joy. You don't have your face to be able to sell that. Did you have to override that in your mind and say, I have to use more body language and be more bigger with my arm flailing? I mean, how do you work that out in your head to sell when people can't see your face?
Well, excellent point, Spug, because as you just said, what it's all about, wrestling is all about, is face expression. You know, that's how people can relate to the pain you have, or how angry you have, how scared you are, and we didn't have that to work with. So yes, we did have to work with our body, expression. I mean, the body movement, and luckily the crowd reaction was fantastic. That helped us a great deal, because you know, when I put my hand out there and I tried, people would scream, like cold or hot or that type of thing, the reaction we had, and so we played a lot with the crowd. It really, really helped us. And of course, as you were saying earlier, Jake, what a guy, you know. I mean, I love to wrestle against him, and being against Jake was like going to a dance, you know. I mean, I really enjoyed it.
We've heard several stories over the years from folks about that pay-per-view, that WrestleMania 7, which was headlined by Sergeant Slaughter in the Iraq heel character with Hulk Hogan, that originally, and I'm old enough to remember being 36, that it was supposed to be in the L.A. Sports Coliseum, where the USC Trojans play their home games and was the home site for the 84 Olympics, and then the story I remember was, due to security reasons, it was moved to the old L.A. Sports Arena. Was it a situation that was it that bad, or was it a ticket sales issue? I mean, because you went from 93,000 at Pontiac Silverdome to an outdoor venue in L.A. Was it ever explained to the talent, okay, guys, this is why we're moving here? Don't know. If you hear stories, this is why?
You know, from what I understand, Alan, is the I heard the same thing you did. I mean, you know, that it was a security issue, because I doubt it, because it was really, the buzz around the whole thing was fantastic. I mean, I don't think they would have any difficulty at all, filling the Coliseum, you know, I mean, because the demand was there. But it did surprise us.
What was that situation like to be around in the locker room with Sergeant Slaughter? Because he was on a History of WrestleMania DVD I watched. He was asked about that time frame, and he said that he actually was driving in bulletproof cars to go to places. Did he ever let on to the other guys on the roster about, oh, I'm kind of uncomfortable doing this Iraqi sympathizer thing, but no, it's what WWF and creative have offered me to do. What was the situation like for someone like you to be seeing him on almost a day-to-day basis?
Well, you know, of course, he's a true professional, and he didn't let on, you know, what was going on. But we were well aware that it was a crazy situation, you know. I mean, what was going on, he was like a traitor, you know. I mean, it was really, people got really emotional about it, and No, but, you know, in the dressing room, he just like, you know, because I guess, you know, wrestlers are a special kind of breed in this way. I remember in the 70s, you know, we used to wrestle in places, and you'd have riots out there. You know, guys would be wrestling, people, you know, fighting and everything, you know, come in the dressing room like nothing happened, you know. Oh, well, you know, hey, how was your day? You know, I mean, just there was a few people throwing chairs and you know, trying to, you know, it was, so, in that sense, Slaughter was just like, everybody else, in the dressing room. I mean, it's amazing sometimes how people, behave in certain ways in certain situations where, you know, you say, wow, man, I would have went, screamed or whatever.
Rick Martel joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. When we've this is our fourth week of doing WrestleMania Memories, and fortunately, we've had Brutus the Barber Beefcake and George Animal Steel on, who were in attendance like you were for WrestleMania 3 in the Pontiac Silverdome. Both of them expressed the same feelings when they got to that building to walk out there. And as fans are aware, if they own a copy of WrestleMania 3 or the WrestleMania Anthology, the opening match on the show is WWE Hall of Famer Don Morocco and Cowboy Bob Orton taking on Tom Zink and yourself. Was it a situation when you guys got out there just to stand there and go, oh my God, we're in the middle of this football stadium that's over unbelievably filled? Was it jitters being the opening match that you're going, dear, looking at the wrestling gods going, dear Lord, don't let me trip?
Yeah, it sure was. I mean, we were, you know, starting this thing, and we wanted to do it right. And of course, you know, the day before when we got to the building, you know, we had to go there, you know, to make sure we, you know, we had some meetings before and all that. And I remember we went in it, in the building. There was nobody in it. And we looked at all the chairs and all the seats and said, wow, this is going to be full tomorrow. We couldn't believe it, you know, the size of it. And of course the excitement around this, you know, because you have to go back in those years. In 1987, that was the very first time that wrestling was taken seriously on a national level, you know, mm-hmm. where it was on a two-day show and Good Morning America, you know, they would talk about it. And there was first time where it got national attention, where people went, wow, you know, 93,000 people and this, you know, the people started talking about it. So there was a big, big buzz about it. And to be part of it, was fantastic. You know, the whole thing. And I remember, you know, because I was good friends, very good friend with, Andre the Giant, you know, him, being a French, speaking person. And so am I. And we used to travel together and everything. And then also was very good friends with Hall, because him and I were roommates at the AWA, you know. We shared an apartment, and I was good friends with both of them. And I remember there was this little little competition between the two, because you had, you know, Andre before Hall came in. Andre was like the attraction in wrestling. He was the person, I mean, the, you know, with Hollywood, with everybody, you know, I mean, He was the attraction, and then he could see that Hulk was coming around. He was going to take his place, you know. He was going to be the man now, you know. And at first he didn't like it, and I remember in Japan there were a little tension between them, and of course Andre had to come to to his sense and realize that he had no choice, you know, that that was time, and his time was past, and now it's time to pass on the baton, you know, the flame, and to Hulk. And I remember I went out because instead we had the monitors in the dressing room to watch the matches. And I remember this match, I went outside. I said, I want to see this live, you know, I want to feel the crowd. And I remember, I don't know if you guys, remember this moment, you know, when Hulk finally slammed Andre, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The crowd, I mean, just being there and the reaction, I mean, I had goosebumps, you know, I mean, it was like, wow, what a moment, you know, and it was great. So the whole thing was really, really something.
Yeah, during that era, it was, as you said, it was a ruckus era for travel and whatnot, but it also was the advent of merchandising for you and the rest of the WWF, as it was called at that time, talent. The Iron Sheik, in an interview he did with our friend Sean Oliver at Kayfabe Commentaries, talked about the first couple royalty checks he received. What was your initial impression when you were told, okay, Rick, we're going to make dolls, action figures, out of you, out of Tom and Tito, and we're going to have ice cream bars and Hulk Hogan rock and wrestling cartoon. Was that something you would have never imagined when you first started in this industry to go, hey, look at that, I'm an action figure, that's cool?
Oh, yes, of course. I mean, we had no idea that it was going to take this this course. And having these merchandising checks, you know, I mean, it was fantastic, really great. And to see these little figurines, you know, and action figures, it was, you know, something that I could have never imagined, ever.
It was also the time of the Saturday night's main event setup that Dick Ebersol and NBC brought in. Was that also pretty cool to have in there? Because as you mentioned at the time, in 87, you had the advent of Survivor Series, and then a couple years later, you had Royal Rumble, and then a couple years later, you had SummerSlam, so you eventually had at least four pay-per-views through the year. Was that nice for you in the creative aspect of a feud to go, okay, well, if I go from Mania, I can get to Saturday Night's Main Event with this story, and then we'll go to Survivor Series? Did that help out at all in creative, or was it just another night at the office?
No, it definitely helped because it was really a great thing to happen in your storyline because it added another dimension, you know, another live night, you know, especially with the Saturday Night Live camera, you know, production around it with Dick Ebersol and all that. It made it very, very exciting, the whole thing, and that's where, you know, we could tell, hey, look, it's really catching on. I mean, if they're doing this, and it gave us a little shot in the arm in the angle we're working at the time to make it even more out there.
For a short while, you were managed by Slick. And then it was, the decision was made either by creative or by yourself to go on your own. But in that era, there was so much amazing managerial talent from Bobby Heenan and Mr. Fuji. Jimmy Hart was there. If you had had your choice of that roster of managers, who would have been perfect for the model character? Or would it have been someone, or to have a female there to be like your Moola was back in the day when she did the Jungle Girl, or have Jeebs for Gorgeous George spray in the ring? Which would have worked best for the model character?
Well, it's hard to say. Slick, he was we were teamed up together, him and I could tell that it wasn't not working. I mean, I wasn't feeling comfortable with it because, in the interviews, you know, he would say things, and then I'd come, we didn't see eye to eye on things, and so I asked Vince, you know, to make the change, and I liked it this way with no managers, you know, because I have an idea of how to create the model gimmick, and so I like it better this way. And if conversation's sake, I mean, just to see what kind of manager would have been the best for that gimmick. I think, you know, it's hard to say, but Bobby Heenan, of course, because I like this guy so much, and I would have loved to work with him because I thought he was a genius. This guy, you know, I mean, I remember in AWA days, you know, I worked a lot against him and Nick Bockwinkle, and I seen him operate as a manager, and this guy always entertained me. What a guy, you know, I mean, so having him as a manager would have been an honor for me. I don't know if it would have been better for the model gimmick. I'm not sure, but you know, when I think of it, I'm glad I did it this way.
If we can take fans behind the creative thing here, I just want to get this in real quick. You're given this idea by Vince, J.J. Dillon, you're going to be the model. How much creative freedom were you given? Was Arrogance and the perfume thing already in place by J.J.? How much is Rick Martel told, okay, you're the model, run with it, or were there other creative people like Pat Patterson or Girl Monsoon or whoever may be in the office guiding you?
No, I mean, everything was... The only thing they gave me was the name, you know, the model, and that's it, you know. Especially in those days where, you know, the things were very, very busy for everybody, you know. So, and I remember I came up, you know, Arrogance and everything, you know. I mean, when I came, you know, I talked to Vince about it, about all the ideas, you know, the run, you know, the you know, when you walk, you know, like the models, you know, they walk in the modeling, you know. Mm-hmm.
The catwalk thing?
Yeah, the catwalk. Okay, thanks for I mentioned all these things. Vince, right away, I mean, they were, any ideas I had was already, right away was, yeah, sure, let's do it. He gave me the green light on everything, you know. So they were great. They were really nice to me for that. So I really had a lot of room, you know, to do a lot of things, and they really helped me create that. But as far as the help along, you know, different things I did, I did it on my own. You know, I look for ideas, ask other people and stuff. But I'm glad that Vince really. You know, give me a leeway on that.
Now, I have a two-part question. You have a tremendous acumen for many things. Technical wrestling, you were very athletic, obviously with the model gimmick, and you sold it perfectly. If you were to have a school or be a guest trainer anywhere, what would your one piece of advice for succeeding in the wrestling industry be to a class of trainees?
Well, it's hard to say that in you know, a word or two.
Well, give as long of an explanation as you want.
We got plenty of time. We're not going anywhere.
Sure. Well, of course, intensity. You know, I mean, there's never, you can't replace intensity. I mean, in whatever you do, and as we talked about earlier, facial expression and being that in that mode, you know, intensity mode where you're so intense that the people in the ringside, they can feel it, and the people behind them, and so on and so on until you've reached way up there, you know. So I think people they take things sometimes take it easy, you know, and I'm talking about every single move that you do, you know. I mean, that's important. Every single holes that you apply, you have to have that intensity and all that, you know, that I think, if the one advice I would give, that would be this one.
Now, the second part to it, when all is said and done, and I know you're retired, but if you get into a Hall of Fame, be it WWE or the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in New York, what would you want your wrestling obituary speech, whatever you want to call it, what is the one thing you would want everybody to remember about Rick the Model Martel?
Well, it's simple, you know. I went on there and gave it my all, you know. I mean, all. I never held back, whether it was in front of 200 people or 20,000 people or 60,000 people. I always wrestled the same way. And that's what, you know, I always worked, you know, my butt off, you know, in there. And I never, I was never a glory happy. I mean, a glory hound. I mean, it was what was the best for the fans. You know, I mean, I remember, and that's what I liked about Tito on that. I remember him and I would be tag team, and, you know, there were some nights where, you know, it was time to take some heat on one of us, and we say, hey, whatever's there, you know, we didn't, well, you know, you took the heat on me this night, and tomorrow will be you, and whatever. I mean, we didn't work this way, you know, and I left Tito for that, and it was, hey, whatever's there. And so my thing was, I was out there for the benefit of the fans, and that's all there is to it.
Got an email question at radioinalliworldofwrestling.com from LaVon Nabel of Nashville. Wanted to know, during your model era of the early 90s, Shawn Michaels had left the Rockers and gone solo as well. Did you ever look and go, no, that gimmick's getting a little close to what I'm doing as the model, or did you not even notice peripherally around you the other heel characters that were going on?
No, I could tell, you know, that his gimmick was, you know, getting a few similarities to mine, you know, but I liked Shawn, and I remember, you know, the AWA days, you know, when I was there, he was there, I liked him, and I remember, in fact, you know, when he first turned heel, he came and asked me if he could travel with me, and, you know, to so we could talk about, he could pick my brain a little bit about, you know, being a heel and stuff, and we had discussions about how to do things, and no, it was very very good, you know, that the whole thing was very positive. And in fact, I remember when we had our first match in SummerSlam, that was his first big match, you know, as a heel. And I remember he came and thanked me, you know, in the dress room, you know, and he said, "Hey, Rick, appreciate it. You know, it's the first my first big match, and he really great." And he thanked me, you know. I had a really good relationship with Shawn, one of respect, mutual respect.
Now, that event you mentioned was in London, England, on the same card you had later on in the night, the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith, and Bret Hart, which many regard as one of the better Intercontinental title matches ever. Would you have liked to have seen yourself move into the Intercontinental title picture earlier than you did? Because you didn't get involved in IC really heavy duty till October of 93. When Shawn had left for whatever reasons, be it the steroid issue, not steroid issue, and you and Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, had your issues over the Intercontinental title, were you ever one of those people that was going, why am I not getting title things, or were titles just peripheral to you that as long as I'm going out there and having good matches and entertaining and the money's coming in, I'm fine. I don't need a title push.
No, I had titles. I mean, I wasn't looking for titles. I mean, if you've seen my bio, you know, I mean, I had titles, you know, since 1974. I mean, I held titles everywhere I went, and you know, I'd been a world champion, AEW world champion, 19 months, and you know, I mean, I was way behind titles. I mean, I was out there, you know, doing my best, and also at the time, I had my eyes on other ventures, you know, in business. Also, I was involved, you know, in the business that I'm in now, you know, and I started my business at that time. And so I was perfectly happy with what was going on.
Now, I have a non-wrestling question for you. You just brought up your business and you are in the real estate state market. Was that important to you to have something to fall back on after wrestling, to have the plan? I mean, you obviously knew that wrestling wasn't going to be there for you forever. But how did that start? Did it start at a young age in the business of, I need to have some other venture to get into when this is said and done? Or was it a spur of the moment type thing?
No, it wasn't a spur of the moment type thing. I was in Oregon. I was there with Roddy Piper. Him and I were tag team there, and we were roommates. And I remember there was a guy that was there in the territory at that time in 1980, a guy which I had a lot of respect for. He used to be a WWF world champion. His name was Stan Stasiak.
Oh, yeah, Stan the Man.
Stan the Man, that's right. Stan the Man. The heart punch, you know. So, and this guy, man, I remember in his days, in his heyday in the 70s in New York, you know, and with Bruno and Pedro and Morales and all that, I was, wow, you know. And now in 1980, he was refereeing, you know, he was down to being a referee. And I remember the promoter's brother there, Don Owens, his brother Elton Owens, he was really a slob and a drunk, you know, and he used to promote a few towns around there, you know. And I remember he used to abuse him verbally in front of everybody, you know, and Stan was just stay there and take it, you know. He had no choice because he needed the job, you know. And right there and then I said, oh, man, holy shit. I said, never to me, never. And I swore that day, I said, I'm going to do what I have to do to make sure that this never happens to me. And I kept, he always stayed in the back of my mind, you know, that I would make sure that I would secure my my retirement after wrestling, where I didn't have to come back and beg, you know, and on my knees, you know, for a job or whatever, you know. You know, it cost me a little as far as professionally, because I know that my last couple of years in the wrestling wasn't as great as I would have liked to be. Because, you know, to be a top wrestler, you have to be 100% wrestler. And I was like a 50% wrestler and a 50% businessman, you know, and you can't give it your all in this. But at the time, you know, I did it this way because I wanted to secure, because unlike now, you know, the money back then, we didn't make enough money where you could just be a wrestler and then retire, you know what I mean, and have millions of dollars and stuff like that. You know what I mean? We were doing great money, but not that great, you know what I mean? So I did it this way, and I don't regret a thing, you know? I mean, you do what you have to do, I had an opportunity, and I took it. I didn't love wrestling any less because of that. I mean, And I worked hard every night, you know. I wrestled Tatanka, and I remember, you know, it was hard for my pride, you know. I mean, just to be where I was, you know, I had been world champion and stuff, and all of a sudden I was like, you know, I remember they asked me, you know, to be like a teacher, you know, for Tatanka and stuff, and you know, I had to swallow my pride, but I did, and I don't regret a thing. You know, and by the way, Tatanka, I think, is, I really enjoyed wrestling him, and, I've been out of wrestling since 98, that's why I made a comeback in 98, in fact, with WCW, because, I wanted to go back into wrestling, because by then my business was doing great, fantastic, I had some good people in charge of things, and I could go back into wrestling being 100% into it, you know, and I did go back at WCW, and I came back in great shape, you know, the shape I wanted to be in, and unfortunately I was 42 years old, you know, and I'd been 25 years in wrestling, my body could feel it, but I was happy that I did do it the way I wanted to do it.
Now you, just real quick, do you have your AWA World Championship hanging in your office? Because I totally would.
No, in fact, if you're, I'm in my office right now, and you would know I was a wrestler in my past. Nothing in my in my office that has to do with wrestling.
I totally would have my AWA title if I had won it hanging in the office. That's just me, though.
Yeah,
but
well, I have a little gym at home, and in that little gym, I only have one thing. There's a big poster of it was like a dream tournament. You know, the Pro Wrestling Illustrated had done that, and it's a big poster of me as AWA World Champion, Ric Flair as the NWA World Champion, and Hulk as the WWF Champion.
Oh,
and
wow.
The three of us are right there beside each other with our belts. It's a really beautiful color poster. Color, and it's really nice, and I have that in my gym.
That's cool. That is pretty cool. I need to go find that issue now.
Yeah, when you were doing, let me just jump in real quick for a second. While you're training for real estate and whatnot, and you're working for WWF at the time, are any of the talent coming up to you going, you know, I'm really looking to settle down somewhere. Can you help me out?
Yeah. Well, you know what I did? Let you know exactly what I do. I don't sell or buy real estate. I bought some real estate back then, you know, commercial real estate and residential real estate. Now I manage that. That's what I do, you know. I'm not like a realtor. You know, I just manage the real estate that I have. I remember I had some thoughts about a few guys about it, nobody ever, you know, talked about it seriously. Other than Tony Gurria, who was my partner in 1980, you know, we always talked real estate, him and I.
When you went to them, go ahead.
I had my microphone muted. I started the question. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You had your hips replaced in 2004.
Yeah.
Are you doing better with that? I mean, probably going to end up having my rotator cuff operated on, but was that a long process to come back from? Did you have to
learn how to
do the model walk again and everything?
Oh, yeah. You know, I tell you, Spug, if you ever had the, you know, I in fact, I would have 2 years too long. I mean, I would have, if I know what I know now, you know, I would have had it done 2 years earlier, because I, you know, after I quit wrestling, I was in a lot of pain, and I said, I shouldn't have carried that long, this pain, you know, that I had. And now it feels great. I'm in good shape. Work out. The only things I don't do is things that I never did, that I didn't do seriously, is play tennis or downhill skiing and stuff like that. And that's it. Other than that, you know, it's really good. When I was a really young, like I was like 14 years old, I used to do a lot of powerlifting and heavy powerlifting, like squatting and squats especially. And from what I was told, I was too early, to do this kind of lifting for my body, and the cartilage and stuff really took a toll, and of course, after 25 years of wrestling, the way I did it, it was tough. But nevertheless, I'm really happy the way things are now, you know, physically.
Before I let you go, I got to ask at least one WCW question since we're almost on the 10th anniversary of the promotion's passing. What was that company like to be in 97, 98? Because at that point, they were literally beating WWF in the ratings. What was that atmosphere like to be around with Eric Bischoff to do the switch from having, you know, you have Vince in control here, and from what we've heard from people, yes, at one point Eric was in control, but then a lot of the talent like Kevin Nash and Scott Hall and Hulk Hogan were kind of running their own things. What was it like for Rick Martel to go from the WWF to WCW?
Well, for me, I was really happy. I mean, I was like, you know, I was thrilled because to be part of it, because as you say, that you know, WCW were, you know, having a great thing going. You know, they were, you know, beating WWE on the ratings, and you know, the buzz was really there, and it was a lot of fun. And also, you know, Eric Bischoff had a great relation with him. He was really nice to me and gave me a great contract. You know, in fact, it was my best contract I've had, and you know, so I was really happy to be there. And on top of it, you know, I was really looking to get a position. I was just there to, like I said earlier, make a return, and it was, you know, for my pleasure, and I was really enjoying it.
For fans that aren't aware of it, you can actually go to, and make sure I get the address right, because if I don't, I make an arrogant spray it in my face, rickthemodelmartel.com, all one word, no spaces. If you want to ask your own questions that we didn't get asked to him, there's photos there, there's kinds of stories there. Thank you so much for taking time out to be with us here tonight. We are real appreciative.
Well, I, Spug and Alan, I really enjoyed doing this interview with you, and you know, it was a pleasure to talk about those time. You know, I know WrestleMania will be in Atlanta this year, and I think it's great because Atlanta is very deserving of this, because you know, Atlanta has always been a fantastic town, wrestling town. I you know, I was there. My first time in 1975, you know, I was a tag team champion with Wrestling 2, Mr. Wrestling 2, and after that, you know, with Tommy Rich in 78. So I know what wrestling means for Atlanta, and I think it's just, it's very deserving that Atlanta has WrestleMania.
That's wonderful. Coming up after the break, we will get into everything with TNA Wrestling as they move closer and closer to Against All Odds. On our World of Wrestling Radio, we'll be right back.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
You say black.
I say white.
You say bar.
I say bite.
You say shark.
I say him.
You never know what will happen when you tune in to CB Radio.
Hello, Fiat Restaurant. May I help you?
Oh, yes. I'd like to make an order, please.
What would you like?
Vegetable fried rice.
Huh?
Vegetable fried rice.
Honey vegetable.
Vegetable
Hello?
Fried rice. Hello?
Yes.
Yes. Vegetable
no
fried
meat.
Rice.
And do you... Egg is okay? No egg.
Egg okay. Egg okay.
Okay.
No bok choy?
Oh, we don't have bok choy.
No bok choy? Okay.
Yes.
Snow peas? You have snow peas?
Yeah, we have snow peas.
Extra snow peas.
What do you mean? You mean the fried rice?
Yes, fried rice.
Oh, fried rice, we don't have snow pea.
No snow pea?
Yeah.
The chicken? You put chicken in there?
Yeah, we have chicken fried rice.
But
you want chicken fried rice?
No, I want the vegetable fried rice with the chicken.
Oh, that means chicken fried rice, yeah?
No, vegetable fried rice with the chicken.
Hello, we have seafood fried rice, beef fried rice, chicken fried rice. Or if you don't want meat, we can make a vegetable fried rice for you. So you want chicken or no chicken?
No, I want the vegetables and the chicken. Can you do both?
We have the, like a fried rice, we have the green peas inside. Not too much vegetables.
Never mind. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, bye.
Tune in to CB Radio Saturdays, midnight Eastern Time on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Wild Talk Radio. The network everyone else steals from.
Are you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Hello everyone, this is Matt Hardy, the owner and creator of www.thehardyshow.com. Make sure to check us out. And right now, you are listening to Wild Talk Radio.
I don't want to go. I love this damn Queen song. That'd be Innuendo by Queen. Thank you so much to the model Rick Martel for that interview. We thought George Animal Steel was going to be our benchmark for this WrestleMania memory series, and wow, was I wrong. So thanks, Spug, for being there with me. And we sat there after that call just going, damn, we could have probably gone another half hour, 45 minutes, maybe gotten into business with Rick Martel. But definitely check out RickTheModelMartel.com for all information regarding Rick Martel. Mace is here with us as well. And we're going to open this segment by talking about all the fun we watched this past week on Impact, and wish Kurt Angle and his fiance the best with their new child, Juliana, which is one of the main reasons why Kurt Angle left the European tour that's going on right now, which the first house show was on the 20th in Lyon, France, that apparently drew 500 to 600 people, and then on the 21st in Paris, France, an estimated 1,500 to 2,000 were in attendance. On this tour, a gentleman by the name of Mark Haskins, I apologize for the name, is getting a UK-based tryout. I'm not 100% sure on which companies he works for. Today, since it's already Wednesday morning in Berlin, they participated in a house show event at the O2 Arena. And then this Thursday, they will go to Glasgow, Scotland, Friday to Manchester, and conclude the tour Saturday in London, England. Unfortunately, last night after the Dublin, Ireland show in the National Stadium, Nature Boy Ric Flair had some very confusing story, and we're going to try to sort through this because this came through multiple news sources, including some fans who are actually at the event. Some insider information here that according to reports, Flair demanded money in advance, which is common in the wrestling business. I believe it's called taking a draw, from your normal salary that you would be receiving, from TNA tour manager Craig Jenkins as they were boarding the bus to head to the airport to take the crew to Berlin. When Mr. Jenkins denied this request, Ric Flair refused to board the bus, and a decision was made to leave Ric Flair behind. We're told that members of the TNA crew supported this decision and were even mocking Flair for his sudden outburst using, quote, signature promo lines when he was left behind. There were actually TNA members on the bus who were apparently wooing as they pulled away. Now, some were calling into question Flair's partying ways during this tour, something he's very notorious for, and apparently is back into doing, for fans that aren't aware of it. Ric Flair's stories go back to the infamous plane ride from hell that the WWE experienced, where I believe there was Kurt Hennig and Brock Lesnar fighting. Michael Hayes had his mullet cut off. Ric Flair gets into his Ric Flair robe in first class and proceeds to do that kind of stuff. It should be noted, however, Mr. Flair was not sent home by TNA office, was simply left behind as a decision was made to move on without him and not hold up the crew. Now, he is still apparently in Europe. We haven't heard if he has flown back to the United States yet and could possibly catch up with the tour. He was not advertised to be in Berlin. He is advertised for Glasgow, Scotland. At that event, he is supposed to team with Frankie the Future Kazarian to take on Douglas Williams and Matt Morgan. If Flair does fly home, most likely a major, major problem. He's obviously, I believe, is in his early 60s, 61, 62 maybe. I could be wrong on that. I don't know if Mace or Spug or even Sorok and our producer can verify a Ric Flair age, but I would rather be opening this segment by talking about an interesting TNA impact, but does this bother either one of you, even Sir Rockin, if he wants to chime in, that Ric Flair is doing something like this?
It's pretty unbecoming of a guy of his status, you know, he's meant to be as... well, the extreme veterans of professional wrestling, you should be setting a better example for the guys on tour. But pulling this type of move is pretty stock standard from what they've been saying for Ric Flair, but doesn't mean I agree with it.
I mean, as an elder statesman in the bit, go ahead, Sir Rockham. Were you just going to have to chime in there? I guess not. Ric Flair is 61, so we were close on the totem score there. Now, Dixie Carter, from what we were told, is on this tour. She was at the Paris, France event. Was actually dressed in a ref's jersey. Was at the show, thanked the crowd for coming, and actually thanked them for coming in French. So definitely not the greatest of moves you want to do with the boss. And Jeff Jarrett being on this tour, Jeff's been involved. He apparently got the most heat out of anyone in Paris, France. He worked with Matt Hardy taking on Shannon Moore and Mark Haskins in Lyon, France. And Matt Morgan and Shannon Moore actually took on Jeff Jarrett and the Pope D'Angelo De Niro, interesting tag team there in Paris. Is this just a sign that something needs to be done here? I mean, I feel awkward talking about this because it's Ric effing Flair. He's wrestling royalty. As Triple H would say, yes, there's a Hall of Fame and the guy's got his own wing in the Hall of Fame. But is this a sign to just say enough is enough? He needs to be curtailed. cycle that exists even in mainstream media in the United States and other countries. Is are we reading way too much into this, or are we right in saying somebody needs to sit him down and go, dude, yeah, you're Ric Flair, but you're embarrassing the crap out of yourself and this company right now?
I'd probably go with the option of sitting him down and going, dude, you are Ric Flair. Yes, you may be deserving of said money, but at this point in time, guess what? We're not giving it to you, so suck it up and do the work. Then we'll give you the money.
And as mentioned, Jeff Hardy is on this tour, and the reason Jeff Hardy is on this tour is, and we'll let Spug chime in a second here, is because his drug case is postponed once again, as the assistant district attorney Warren McSweeney told senior resident judge James Webb they would need more time, and the judge agreed to a February 16th date, according to the Southern Pines Pilot newspaper. Everything was pointing towards an end to the case. Even Jeff Hardy himself told TMZ that everything would be taken care of. However, it seems both sides have not agreed to do anything, which prevented Hardy from taking a plea bargain for pleading guilty. The newspaper is quoted as saying, courtroom observers don't expect Hardy will plead guilty straight up to all charges, but rather will agree to a lesser agreement. For the love of humanity, just end this already. I mean, you know, guilty, not guilty, move on. I mean, Spug is back with us here. Your thoughts on this whole thing with Ric Flair, does this bother you at all that at 61 years old this man is doing this kind of stuff on a tour?
I would like, you know, first of all, what he did... What Flair did is not uncommon in the business. Sorry, I had my microphone up on my head. What Flair did is not uncommon in the business. I've done it. I've asked for my pay before a show to kind of recoup gas expenses of getting there, because it cut into money to be able to use for food or whatever when you were in the city. It's not uncommon. Although in Flair's stature within the business, you would think he would have enough money that he wouldn't have to do that.
Well, that's where something comes up. Let me stop you for a second, because he's had financial issues before. He's had a legal issue with HighSpots.com over the NWA World Championship belt. Not the 10 pounds of gold, but the actual old NWA World belt. He's had financial issues. He's in the middle of, he recently divorced the wife, and I think he's with another girl. But as Mace said, is this something that someone like Triple H or Arn Anderson or someone else, is there someone that's just got to go, dude, yes, we know you're Ric Flair, but at 61 years old, you know, the Motor City Machine Guns aren't partying like you, and they're four times younger than you. None of our talent is doing what we're doing. I mean, I don't know if they're doing it or not. I'm not there in France or overseas. But isn't there a point where there's a click in your head that goes, I'm tired of being sick and tired and partying?
I don't know. Especially, especially for someone like Flair, who has been to pinnacles in the business that I don't think anybody will get to in the next 25 years. So I think there's a part of his brain that tells him, I can do this forever. Why? Because I'm effing Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm.
And... again, I think I said it on Wrestle Talk Radio the other night. Ric Flair has begun to believe his own press clippings. He believes his own hype. And it is unfortunate. And I don't think it's as simple as sitting him down now It's to the point where they just need to ignore him. Don't book him. Don't use him. You know, send him on his merry way and let him go. Because it's not going to get any better.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations. Like I said, you know, at first coming in, and you know, I'm against Hulk Hogan back at this time last year, and I'm going to butt heads with him, and then I want him here because he's still at 61 years old, has so much to offer in an on TV role, but. To put him in a ring right now, I'd rather not. I mean, if you watched this past week's Impact, you saw him in the non-wrestling role, being with Eric Bischoff in power, having TNA escort Kurt Angle out of the building, and then you know, having an issue backstage where you know, he's doing the thing with AJ Styles, doing the ice thing, you know, and Flair calling out Matt Morgan. I like him being there because he is good for those instances. But I don't know if Mace agrees with this or you do or any of the fans listening in. You can call 267-297-1397 and give your opinion or Skype Sir Rockin'. But I like him possibly in and out, but to make it total nonstop Ric Flair might be a problem. I mean, does he exit if you're Dixie and you're Jeff, to either one of you, I get maybe to go back to what Spug was saying, is this a point where there I know not to use the word intervention, but I'm gonna use it anyway, that you know, everybody goes, okay, what the heck's going on here, man? Are you living the gimmick up at the Hard Rock Hotel when you're here in Orlando? I mean, what do you do here? Do you do like he says, Mace? Do you, like Spug said, do you just say, that's it, we're out of the Ric Flair business, Ric Flair's gone after Against All Odds, or do you sit him down and say, you need to clean your act up, or you are getting future endeavored?
I'd probably sit him down and say, you know what, you're going to have to either shape up or chip out. Pretty much, and in Ric Flair's financial position, I don't think he can afford to ship out.
And I hope not. That's the thing. This past Thursday's Impact turned into total nonstop drama. And welcome to As the Kurt Angle Family Turns is what happened here. Stay with me because my story gets fun, kids. You got Kurt in the ring, and I'm going to do my thing. I want Karen. I want Jeff. Da, da, da. Flair Bischoff. No, be gone, be gone. Get out. Later on, of course, the Jarrett's come out for an Angle expose. Kurt tries to jump Jeff, but it doesn't go well. Next thing you know, Angle's involved again later on. Gunnar and Murphy are involved. We've addressed this before, Spug, of the idea of taking the personal life and using it. And obviously Karen hasn't said anything that's gone on here. Because she's got a lot of ammunition from the stories we've heard. A certain former WWE Canadian diva is rumored to have had an affair with Kurt Angle. And I mean, is there an end point with this? That there's going to be a verbal thing, or is it just a lot of teasing and Against All Odds we'll have a blow off and maybe get him to lockdown and have Angle versus Jarrett in the lockdown cage? How far can this go? Can it make it to April?
I don't think it'll make it to April. Not one bit. Which Steve are you talking about? Are you talking about Kim? Is it the rumored affair with Gail Kim?
Mm-mm. There's been a rumored affair with a certain blonde Canadian superstar.
Wait, who? Dude, just say it.
Fine. There's rumors going around that during his TNA WWE stay, Kurt Angle had an affair with Trish Stratus. I can't confirm it. I can't deny it. I don't want to use her name because I'm trying to get her booked as a guest, but I probably won't now.
There's not. You're talking about a rumor, dude. You're not accusing anybody of anything. You're talking about a rumor. We talk about rumors and innuendo all the time on this show.
But does this have legs to at least, can you carry this feud to lockdown? I mean, because it's obvious Kurt is possibly a part of they, which we'll address in a moment, but if it's the they that we think it is, can you get legs creatively to lockdown in April, or does this thing end at Victory Road in March?
Depends.
Or even at Against All Odds?
It depends on how the they thing works out. It really depends. I think this particular angle is going to be over next month. Although, I think in the end it's probably going to be Legion or Legacy or Lick My Nutsack or whatever they're calling themselves now. Versus they in the steel cage at lockdown. That'll be the ultimate lockdown.
To Mace, does this Kurt Angle Jarrett thing get to lockdown, or is, like Spug said, this is over at Against All Odds, possibly Victory Road as a nail in the coffin? Is there legs in this? Is there fan interest? Because this show did as a rating a 1.15, which was down from the 1.25. Now, I'm not a Nielsen Media Research expert. That's another member of my family, but are there legs in this? Are you interested in hearing what Karen Angle, former Angle, now Jarrett's got to say? Or are you just like, shut up and get him in the damn ring already?
I'm like, shut up and get her off my TV and get them into some decent feuds. Preferably not with each other. And I'd like to see this over and done with by the next pay-per-view. And let's hope so, because guess what? Spoiler alert, people, we get to see this all the way for the next few tapings.
And for fans that are wondering what Crimson was saying, the Tommy Mercer is his real name. They're calling him. They are coming, not to give away this week's Thursday MMAC, but I believe one of they will be arriving, and apparently a mortal is not safe. Nobody's safe. Unfortunately, Ken Anderson's world championship reign is not safe because the dude second week in a row was a part of a losing team, this time with Rob Van Dam losing to beer money. I mean, he's obviously not going to get a singles match until the February 3rd event where he'll defend against Jeff Hardy. But why creative is done this? This is an open end thing, either one of you. Why put him in tag matches to do what? What are you proving by putting your world champ in tag matches other than maybe there's still some concussion issues and you're trying to protect him? I mean, what's the benefit here, Mace? Is there a benefit at all?
You're trying to prove that Ken Anderson by himself is not a draw, and yet Jeff Hardy is, using the old Hulk Hogan method? You think about any time, especially in WCW, when somebody that wasn't named Hulk Hogan had the belt, they were put in tag matches and everything else, and they'd be on the losing end, they look weak as a champion. Then when you give the belt back to Hogan, guess what? All of a sudden, Hogan's a very successful champion. They're doing the same thing here with Ken Anderson and Jeff Hardy. They make Anderson look like crap. They put the belt back on Hardy. All of a sudden, he looks like $1 million.
Wait. They put the belt back on Hardy?
They could. I mean, that could be. February 3rd is the date that Jeff Hardy has his contracted rematch. Nothing's been announced for Against All Odds on February 13th. Not a single match has been announced for that pay-per-view yet, unless I've missed something. So the theory going around a lot of fans that I talk to at events, including ASW Full Throttle here in Tampa, is that Anderson was just a temporary to get the belt off, as we said, due to his legal issues, and now that the legal issues are over, we're going to throw the strap back on the crackhead kid.
God, please no. Please no.
I hope not either. I really hope not either.
You finally put your strap on somebody credible other than Rob Van Dam. You know, I'm going to say this, and I know OWW has power, and it will probably reach the appropriate individual. Jeff Hardy is a cancer to wrestling. Jeff Hardy is a cancer to everything that this business stands or has stood for.
Well, he is the Antichrist of wrestling, so we'll call him
Jeff
a cancer.
Jeff Hardy has no business being in a wrestling ring anymore. Jeff Hardy, and again, the opinions of the Spud Guy do not necessarily reflect that of Alan Wojcik, The Mace, Wild Talk Radio, Brad Dykens, Jason Dedrich, Online World of Wrestling, or any other affiliated program. That being said, Jeff Hardy needs to get the hell out of the wrestling business. Dude's a drug addict. Every time he steps in that rope, between those ropes, into that ring, with either being medicated or not, because that is the rumor and innuendo and allegations against him, he puts himself, others, and the fans in jeopardy of walking out of there seriously hurt. He has no business whatsoever continuing to be in the business, let alone holding a heavyweight title. Guys like Jeff Hardy need to be given an old-timer seat and taken out of the business the hard way, because they don't get it and never will.
Interesting points all around. Go ahead, mate. Do you have anything to add, mates?
Not really. The only thing I can really add is I'm doing my James Storm impression right now with some 6 ounce curls.
Hey, speaking of drug issues, we'll move on. Sid Vicious, who is known as Sid Udy at age 50, was arrested over the weekend in Memphis. WMC-TV reports that the police did a routine traffic stop because he was not wearing a seatbelt, and then proceeded to find 18 grams of good old-fashioned marijuana resting on an armrest. Was charged with not wearing a seatbelt, driving without the license, and possession of the Mary Jane. Was later released on the $1,000 bond. There's a couple live events that we're going to address in a moment here, but I wanted to get into something quick, some MMA news that came across our wire. Spike TV officially announced a new deal to televise 12 UFC pay-per-view prelims in 2011, starting with next Saturday's event. That would be almost every show this year, within one or two exceptions. They've announced on the 5th they will air the Cowboy Donald Cerrone versus Paul Kelly bout and the Chad Mendez versus Michihiro Omagawa. A win by Mendez would put him in line for a featherweight championship shot. Cerrone versus Kelly is the first big test of the major WEC stars in the UFC. According to some friends, and I'll let Spug and Mace chime in a second here, the report says there is a very interesting dynamic because a lot of people think the WEC guys are not UFC caliber, and a loss here would leave a lot of told-you-sos on that account. So to the two gentlemen that run the to tap-outs to knockouts program, I leave the floor to you for a couple of minutes. Your thoughts on this idea and these two matches as you go into this thing on February 5th.
It's not new that they would host prelims on Spike, because they've done it for about a year now that they've put the prelims live on Spike. And then they'll reshow one or two afterward. That isn't new. the thought that the WEC guys can't hang in the UFC is absolutely asinine, because Jake Shields is getting ready to fight George St. Pierre in May. And he is a serious, serious threat to George St. Pierre's title. And Jake Shields is a former Strikeforce and WEC guy. The reason why WEC guys are the way they are, you know, as far as the lower weight classes, is because UFC abolished those weight classes years ago, and they had nowhere to fight. So they went to places like Japan and WEC and Strikeforce. So I see no issue. I don't think a loss is going to mean anything. It doesn't mean shit.
I got nothing to follow up. Bugs pretty much said he's pretty much said the same shit I would.
He's done it. Amazing. I want to pimp some shows. If you live in Nashville this Saturday night, you need to be at the State Fairgrounds, the Nashville Fairgrounds Sports Arena, for Southern All-Star Wrestling's tribute to the Fairgrounds. This is a fundraiser for the Make-A-Wish Foundation Middle Tennessee chapter. Doors for regular seating open at 6:30. Bell time, no matter what, is 7:30. There is VIP seating, which is reserved seating, and a special VIP event for $14. General admission is $10. The event will be special MC of the evening is Fox 17 Tennessee morning show host Brandy Malone. A main event, and if you live in Nashville, you're going to see this all over the news in the next few days in the town. The final match, if you believe that, referee Dirty Dutch Mantel of OWW Radio fame will referee superstar Bill Dundee versus WWE superstar, WWE Hall of Famer, and good Lord willing, in the next few weeks, a guest on this show, Jerry the King Lawler. There will be a tribute ceremony.
Call Dutch
Mantel. Oh, I'm working on it, baby.
Call Dutch Mantel and try to get him on the show. Be like, hey, help us get Jerry Lawler.
I'm working the magic. Derek King Enterprises, which is Derek King and Teen Excitement Drew Haskins, will take on Kevin Wyatt and former WWE superstar Brian Christopher in a no DQ match. One of my personal favorites, Hammerjack, will take on the SAW Southern Heavyweight Champion Lone Star. If you've never seen Lone Star in person, dear God, he's big, he's bad, and I feel for Hammerjack. In a special attraction match, the notorious KID, Kid Cash, will take on the headliner Chris Michaels. PG-13's Wolfie D will take on Dangerous Doug Gilbert. The Maddox Brothers will take on David Young and Sigmund, the Diamonds in the Rough. And another favorite of mine, Eric, the Dragon Andrews, has laid out a special open challenge to anyone to come and face the best in Nashville. Now, for the VIP tribute to the Fairgrounds holders, you'll be able to attend an autograph session with all the legends and superstars before the show. There'll be some pre-show matches. Tickets are available by calling 724-355-3172. You can email sawwrestling@hotmail.com or visit sawfairgrounds.vze.com. You can order tickets there as well. And if you can't make it there, Friday the 4th of February, speaking of cool shows, MECW, Main Event Championship Wrestling, will have a super show at Vincennes University PE Complex in Vincennes, Indiana. I'm probably mispronouncing that. I apologize. 8 p.m. bell time. Main event. Wild Eyed Southern Boy Tracy Smothers taking on Jerry the King Lawler. In a semi-main event, the natural Chase Stevens will take on former WCW World Champion Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner. Al Snow with Head will be there. The Bad Boys will take on the Hybrids. Gank the Freak Barzini will take on Fireball Johnny Richards. Brian Christopher will take on Bill Dundee. Doors for that event are at 7 o'clock. Bell time is 8 o'clock. If you're one of the first 200 fans, you will get a special meet and greet with Jerry the King Lawler. Tickets can be purchased through mecwpro.com. This Friday, as always, ASW Full Throttle Friday Nights at Stroker's Billiards in Tampa, Florida. You can find Stroker's Tampa on Facebook or MySpace. You can go to aswflorida.com, where you can also see footage from our recent Chain Reaction event and our special tribute video to Johnny Armani of the World's Sexiest Tag Team, who suffered a major health scare this past Tuesday. Different stories have been going around that it was a heart attack, that it was some crazy stuff, and we wish Johnny Armani nothing but the best in his health issues and hope to see him back in a ring somewhere soon. Tomorrow night, if you're new to this network and listen tonight because it was the Model Rick Martel, thank you for being here with us. This show is a part of a weekly run every day on this network, maybe the exception of Mondays. There is programming involved. I'm not alone here each week. You have a wrestling event to pimp. Go forth and pimp that event, Mace.
Yes, for once I actually have an event to pimp, so it's not just Alan doing all the pimping. Melbourne City Wrestling in Victoria is making their return to the Thornbury Theatre on February the 19th. Event at the moment is the Melbourne City Championship between Danny Psycho, the champion, against Tommy Hellfire, the challenger. There's also a number one contendership match between Rocky Marino and Mike Patterson and Slex. An interstate challenge, the one and only Crackerjack going up against somebody from interstate. We do not know at this point in time. We have Kelly Slater of Shimmer fame coming back to Victoria doing a 2-out-of-3-fall submission match with Shazza McKenzie, and other matches to be announced as time rolls on. If you would like to find out more about Melbourne City Wrestling, go to www.melbournecitywrestling.com.au. Otherwise, you can call 9484-9831 to book your tickets for their upcoming event, Melbourne City Wrestling Presents Vendetta.
Vendetta.
And now let's hear you shamelessly plug Otaku Talk Live, 9 p.m. Eastern, tomorrow night. What are you guys talking about?
No idea. It's not my show anymore.
Mace knows.
At this point in time, I believe we're going to have Omega geeking out over some recent Thundercats news, toy releases, whatevers, along with your usual geek news for the week, and I believe we are actually going to tackle the topic of greatest sidekick of all time, I believe, Spug, as it was your invention.
Not necessarily an invention, but cool.
Yes, visit SydneySyn.com, and on Saturday we are covering Strike Force, guys?
Yes, Strike Force is this weekend.
So tune in, I guess 9 p.m. Eastern, followed by CB Radio, which will be,
by the way,
crazy and all that much fun. What?
When is my chick coming on?
Whenever she replies to my email. waiting for it. But check out CB Radio. Last week we had a Grammy Award type performance from someone on that is in love with someone on this network. She won't let us play it on Facebook, but check out the archive at wildtalkradio.com. You can hear her sing. And you never know what we're coming up with for CB Radio Midnight Dish.
And it is this Sunday. It is the Royal Rumble. If you're sitting there after the Rumble going, I want to talk about the show because it sucked. Or I'm sitting there going, I want to talk about the show because it rocked.
Alan, can I just step in?
I'm going to get to him.
No, I want to do it chronologically,
but he's a big name. He gets to go last.
No, Alan, I was trying to pimp something for Wrestle Talk. No, if you're watching the Royal Rumble, come to WildTalkRadio.com. Come into our chat room. Discuss the event as it's happening with us. will be in the chat room. The chat room will be open. We want to hear your opinions. So come in. Come early. 8 p.m. Eastern. Tune in and watch the Rumble alongside with us in the chat room if you're ordering the show. We want to have a chat room conversation with you people. Come early. Come often. Stick around. Post-show conversation. Yep. WrestleTalk Radio. Once the Royal Rumble is off the air with Spug, Mace, Omega, I think Will. Alan Wojcik will be our guest. And as well, the Canadian himself, the OLD, O-N-E, Tim Stein.
Now, before you get to the Rumble, you need to tune into this network at 7 o'clock because you think Johnny Kazmir has been having awesome guests on Life is Callous. This week takes it, man. Try international TV star, comedian, and visitor to many rehabs, Andy Dick, is going to be on Wild Talk Radio at 7 o'clock. Now, before you get to this Sunday, you need to do us a favor. Both WrestleTalk Radio and All I Want of Wrestling Radio are nominated for Wrestling Radio Awards. You need to go to www.wrestlingradioawards.com. You can vote for either show for Show of the Year. You can vote in Tim Stein as your Host of the Year.
Why would you do that?
You can vote me in as Host of the Year. I don't think I'm that great at this, but hey, why not? You can vote for Media Interview of the Year for our wonderful interview with the King of Old School, Steve Corino, and his mom. You can also vote Female Interview of the Year for WSU champion Mercedes Martinez, who survived a 40-minute long ladder match, taking out Angel Orsini and setting up a match in March with Serena Deeb, which we'll address at a later date because we're going to try to get them both back at some point or another to talk some smack.
Can we just adopt her, please?
Adopt which
Spug,
one?
Spug, Mercedes. Spug wants to make her breakfast. I want to adopt her.
I'll see what we can do. You never know.
Never mind.
Yeah, so you need to do us this favor because there's other shows out there. Our two shows are the best. I don't care if WTR wins. I do. I want to see them win. I wouldn't mind winning either. But don't let some of these other shows that outright, well, suck. And they know who they are because they're listening, and thanks for downloading the podcast to Click Wrestle and iTunes. Wishing you had the guests that we have. And yes, I know I probably shouldn't be doing this because Brad and Jason are going to talk about the competition. You're acknowledging them. Well, for once, I'm going to show Wrestling Radio Awards that the Wild Talk Radio Network has the best wrestling talk shows in the world. Vote. You get to vote once a day. From your computer, you can vote from your phone, you can vote from your neighbor's thing, Facebook it, email it, whatever you need to do. Help us win. We may get Mercedes Martinez to come to your house and beat you up if you don't.
Yes.
I'm kidding.
Yes, go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com. Voting ends midnight Eastern on Saturday.
And there's another award show, man. There's an even better award show. WTR Awards, which Sir Rockin' will talk about right now. This is some cool stuff.
It's going to be goofy. It's going to be funny. It's going to be all that and a bag of chips, not crisp, chips. And it airs a week from Saturday, 11 p.m. Eastern, hosted by the end-all, be-all, the funniest man on WTR, Omega. We're going to give out awards for everything. Best interview, phone call, show segment, and show and host of the year, and a bunch of other things, including the Lifetime Achievement Award. And all the hosts are going to give out a little something special to someone else on the network. Go to www.wildtalkradio.com/WTR awards and vote for who you think should be Host of the Year, like me. Thank you very much.
All right. I think we're done. I want to thank Brad Dyke and Jason Jedrich, as always, for giving me the platform. Tim Stein, Sir Rockin, for letting me be a part of this amazing network. WildTalkRadio.com is where you can go to get archives of every show that we mentioned, including this one. Our show is podcast through iTunes. You can find our weekly press releases on the OWW Genesis forum, which can be followed at twitter.com/OWW Genesis forum. I have one of those twit things, yes, twitter.com/Logic.
Wild Talk Radio and hashtag TJ Omega.
Yes, and then also Spug, Mace for being here. The model Rick Martel was epic, legendary. Thanks for having him. Brian Shields for coming by, WWE Encyclopedia, and don't forget his event in Franklin Square. Thanks to the legend that is Freddie Mercury. He left this planet way too soon, but left us with a musical legacy that will last through our generation and others. So thank you for being with us, and we'll see you next Tuesday night here on All I Will of Wrestling Radio. Also Sunday night, as Sir Rockin said, come by WildTalkRadio.com chat room, talk Royal Rumble, and we'll see you on Wrestle Talk Radio 11 o'clock Eastern. Have a good night.